Hello everyone, Shannon Guth here, getting you ready for our Week 12 recap and exit interview for Survivor South Africa Immunity Island. Mike and I spoke to Queen Pulessa, and that's for around 2 hours and 14 minutes, and then after that, Mike spoke to Wider on the exit interview. So, hope you enjoy all of that, and I will see you on the other side.
£1 million.
Hello everyone and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa Immunity Island. I'm your host Shannon Guth, here to discuss episode 12 of the season. And what a dramatic episode it was. People loved it across the board, which was really fun. I think it brought a lot of joy, a lot of humor, and as I said, a lot of drama. So to talk about it, I have two great people on the line with me. Firstly, please welcome the ceiling to my contestants this season. It's the great Mike Bloom.
Yeah, and nobody can call me out because everyone is doing it in that regard.
Yeah.
Shannon, my birthday was this past Thursday, and I say it with full sincerity. I could not have thought of a better gift than not only my favorite episode of the season, not only one of my favorite Survivor episodes in a while, but maybe one of my favorite tribal councils of all time. I am so excited. The episode was, for lack of a better term, delicious, and I'm excited for a second taste.
I thought you were saying the gift, the explicit gift to you that Doral got a shout out. Now, that was for your birthday, if I ever heard it.
Yes, the drought, shout out. Yeah. I love it. Well, because, you know, not to take too much away and belabor the point, but if you remember back during our preseason interviews, I do believe, ironically enough, it was during the conversation with Warda where the question was like, oh, would you rather get voted out pre-merge or, like Doral,
yeah,
go to the end and get zero votes? So maybe that seed was planted and it grew and grew until Warda, at her breaking point, decided to invoke his name once more.
So glad I awkwardly left that in. It makes total sense that it germinated from there and it came out explosively at this tribal council. Like, a lot of things were happening at this tribal council, but we have someone, and it's a great week where we're going to talk about, you know, this end game and the jury and everything. We have a lot of questions for this guest. He is a star from Survivor South Africa Philippines, whose legendary literally changed the course of Survivor Winners at War. It is the great Pulessa Tao. Pulessa, thank you for being here.
Hi, guys. Hi, Shannon. Hi, Mike. Thank you so much for inviting me. I am excited.
Yeah, you came for a great episode, but we haven't spoken to you in 2 years, you know, since the last Survivor South Africa season. So, you know, that's a big 2 years. Again, I want to get your take on the Winners at War stuff, but how have you been since then?
I've been great. I mean, you know, everything taken into account. The last time we spoke, there was no pandemic,
yeah,
and we were living our lives freely. But other than that, I've been really good. And yeah, I've been enjoying this season so much. But I enjoy every season, so hey.
Yeah, I mean, well, okay. So the big thing that happened since we last spoke to you in the Survivor universe is that Adam Klein, who watched your season, he thought that the podium, yep, had an idol, much like you did. He was calling it the Pulessa idol in confessionals. And because he went to take that podium idol, which wasn't a podium idol, you know, it changed the course of that season. It was a huge moment. So what was that like to be like, you were having such a direct influence on like the biggest US season that had ever happened and everyone's like tagging you? What was that moment like?
It was incredible. You know, the Survivor has a huge, huge community, but I think there's none bigger than the American Survivor community, and American Survivor obviously being the originator. So having someone, you know, knowing that someone sort of looked, stole my season, and someone who was on American Survivor said, you know what, I think whatever happened with Pulessa could happen with me. And him actually hearing him call it the Pulessa idol, that was also just like really incredible. He tagged me himself, you know, afterwards when people were sort of criticizing the fact that, you know, how could he think that's even a possibility? Obviously, people who never watched my season. And then, you know, he sort of showed a video of me taking my podium idol, and, you know, finally people got it. Okay, this is why he did it. And obviously brought a lot of attention. And I loved every second of it because it just shows, you know, how much bigger the Survivor community is and how much we take from each other as well during each season around the world.
So that being said, let's focus back in on South Africa. You say you've been loving the season so far. Has it been anyone in particular, any moves in particular? What have been your thoughts about just the wild direction this season has been going?
I think from the very start, I think, in fact, in the first few episodes, I was getting a little, I wasn't very happy because I felt like there was too much kumbaya going on and there weren't, I mean, I'm a big moves person. And I think the one thing that I've learned as a South African myself, South Africans are very gutsy people. And we are those kind of people who just want to go in. We go in hard from the very start. So, you know, seeing this one take a little bit of a different take, you know, so it started off really calmly, as though like it was going to be smooth sailing, the seas were fine. And then all of a sudden, really close to the merge, things just started blowing up and, you know, the waves just started going wild. And I absolutely love that. And I think I can definitely say one of the people who started off that, you know, that major rumbling was Tyson. So I started, you know, keeping like a really close eye on him because pre-merge and I mean, closer to merge as well, I hadn't really sort of pinpointed someone who was like a front runner. And I thought the editing and the production wasn't really pushing forward like a front runner or someone who was making like big moves until now, of course, until just before merge. And so, yeah, all of that happening, the forming of, you know, the major three alliance now being Tyson, Kieran and Wardah really stirred things up. And I was happy to see that because it looked like the power was, you know, swaying one way. And it's literally one move. That's the greatest thing about Survivor. One move can change absolutely everything.
Yeah, I mean, RIP, you know, trios. I know that Chappies is going to shout the Destiny 3 from the hilltops. But to your point, we got this big power shift at the merge from the Zambas over to the Vunas. That disintegrated quickly. And I think even more so now, we've had so much talk these past few episodes about like, when do you take the shot at the trio? When's the time to do it? And it seems like while Chappies and Centony did not get what they wanted last week, they were able to do so this week, granted through some, you know, advantages, but the trio is broken up and the game is more wide open than it was before. I think there is still some talk about, you know, was this the right target? But regardless, just for the momentum of the season, I am incredibly happy that the trio is broken up because now we have a really fun dynamic at the final six, Shannon. 2-2-2. I feel like it's been a long time since we've seen that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really interested in how next week will go before we even really discuss this week. But it is, you know, three pairs, what it looks like. And one person in those pairs, of which there's a lot of physical strength in every pair, is going to win immunity. And you would think send someone to Immunity Island. So one whole pair will be immune. And what I think is going to happen is that immune person will send their partner to Immunity Island so that they can stay and both be immune. And then that person will become like the lone immune swing vote. So even if it is like a Chappies who sends Suntony, even Tyson, who's been yelling at him, is going to have to come with Kieran and be like, well, Zumba, you know, have a lot on the jury. Let's go with them because they'll have nothing to do. Even this four, they could have again where Suntony and Chappies again are totally immune. So I do think next week is a really interesting prospect, especially with Immunity Island coming in where there's these like really small numbers, but I'm really interested to see how it'll go. But this week as well, like I think that the reason that people love this week so much was it was like so hugely character focused, which has been like a bit of a criticism on the season that there hasn't been enough of that emotionality that Tyson has evolved into himself. But Lessa, what did you think about the fact that it wasn't really as much about the move? Because again, like, I mean, we'll talk about the strategy, but like, the two people on the bottom were immune and like they kind of chokeholded, you know, the majority into having to do this because no one else was available. It was more really about these like explosive characters coming out.
Absolutely. And I think I love that a lot because I love characters, you know, because that's what really, that's the essence of Survivor. It's the characters because they draw you in. They draw you into their world a little bit. They draw you into their emotions, their feelings. And Survivor is a really emotional game, right? The emotions drive a lot of the game. And seeing that really makes us as the audience, you know, feel more closer and drawn to any particular person, which is why I was saying that before I felt like nothing was really happening because it didn't seem like there was any front runner and I wasn't feeling connected to any particular player. And now post-merge, you know, because a lot more of that, you know, characterization is taking place, you're starting to feel drawn to a particular character for any kind of reason, and not just the moves, but because we're getting to know them a little bit better. And that's what makes you know, a player a favorite. It's getting to know who they are, getting to understand how they react in certain situations, and the situations being as hectic as Survivor situations, you get to see, it's almost like Survivor brings out like a dramatization of anyone's character. So even if you are not, you know, even if you are a little bit of something, Survivor will sort of push it to the edge and make it seem more dramatic than you would be in like everyday normal life. And that's what's so exciting about it right now, that we're getting to see everyone and see them angry and see them happy and see them disappointed, you know, see them in their real essence and be drawn to who they are.
Yeah, I loved this episode, love this tribal council, because I think it was the most human episode we've had of Survivor SA so far. And again, that is not to besmirch stuff that came before it. Love the merge episode. There was a couple of really, really top tier episodes before that. And the season overall has been solid. But yeah, I mean, like, to Pelessa's point, we can certainly regard the gameplay that people have. But at the end of the day, you're watching a show about people starving out there in the wilderness. And no matter how much you try to push those emotions down,
so much this week, but some of them,
some of them are begrudgingly. So there are emotions that bubble and brim to the surface. And I know that Tyson says at Tribal Council, right? Like, I tried to play like this emotionless robot, but let me be emotional for a second. I'm like, yes, yes. Survivor players, I want to see you be emotional. I know that you want to come in and try to, you know, divorce those emotions to play the best game that you possibly can. But at the end of the day, I want to see personality. I want to see humanity come through. And I feel like we really got that in this episode. It's really comparable to me to the Paul Boot episode, where it's just like, sometimes you want to make the best move for you. And sometimes there's just someone that's really pissing you off and you just got to get rid of them. And one of the things I really loved about the Tribal Council was that it was just like, man, I felt like I was watching some sort of SmackDown happening.
It's like Jerry Springer. Like
was, yeah, or like I felt like I was watching some sort of like a custody case, you know, like some high profile court case where Nico is the judge presiding. But I do feel like, unlike a lot of other, you know, conflicts in Survivor history, this one didn't seem to be based in any sort of, you know, misogyny or racism or phobias of any regard. It really was just like, hey, these people have a personal conflict. There's a lot going on that people are trying to bring out to the surface, spilling everything out on the table, though ironically, we're not spilling the rice. And it was fun to, I think, watch that type of conflict happen without necessarily needing to worry about, like, okay, these are ugly people showing ugly things. People certainly did not come off well in this fight. We can talk about it. But I loved getting to see the personalities of these people when the conflict was inherently baked into what was going on in the game.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot for me, like allusions to South African Survivor Champions, which we just recapped earlier this year. I mean, Warada taking the rice hostage is basically out of the Zan playbook of taking the Flint hostage, which is a move we liked at the time as a desperate play. So, you know, just the idea of stealing being such a big concept was
one. Not to mention, she threatened to do an Altov.
Yeah, and hugely about Altov, because Altov as well, he also had won the rice for the tribe. So it was the exact same thing happening.
Yeah, which is wild to think about. She does not go the full Altov. And obviously, you know, in my exit interview with Warda coming up at the end of this podcast, she claims that she never actually was going to do it, that the plan the entire time was for her to, like, claim it at camp to scare Chappies into switching out the rice, but then give most of it to Tyson. Pelessa, I got to get your thoughts on all this. You played Survivor. If you heard someone at Tribal Council try to hold the rice hostage, how do you view them?
Look, the one thing I always say in the beginning of every Survivor season is don't mess with the food, because food literally is life. I know a lot of people who watch Survivor, some people are still skeptical about the realness of the game on its own. And I think, contrary to my season, in fact, I saw these people eating quite a lot from the beginning of the season. I was like, where did they get it looked like they were making home cooked meals, you know what I mean? And I was like, wow, they to me, it looked like they had quite a lot of food. Contrary to how I felt when I was there, we hardly had any food. And I remember there was a time where we went for days in my tribe, you know, without eating at Visayas. And the one night we actually boiled hot water and drank that to give our stomachs the illusion of drinking soup. So I was actually surprised that food was going to be a problem for them, because I saw them as, you know, like a rich version of Survivor, for example, because they had a little bit more to eat than I had remembered ever eating when I was on the island. However, like, yes, don't mess with the food. And if you can imagine, you see people starving. One episode is 45 minutes, but it's 3 days on the island. So if you're seeing them starving for 45 minutes, this means that these people have been starving for 3 days. And the rationing is so important. And food intake is one of the most important things in Survivor, because you need that little bit of food to use that energy for the really, really hard challenges that they have there, you know, to go through the weather and just to make you feel, it's like the food is like a safe space, because no matter what's going on in the tribe, when it's time to eat, we're all together because we need this food and we're getting the same thing. We're getting that sustainability from whatever little food that we have. So if I heard someone was stealing food, trust me, I think I would be as upset as Tyson was. And that person would probably have their name on the ballot that I write that night, because yeah, just don't mess with the food. We need it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, well, in terms of like Warda saying that it was never the plan, saying it in the exit, saying it at tribal council, like I believe contestants, what they tell me in confessional, and she told me it was her plan. Now I like the plan. As I've said, we said at the time a few months ago, we liked that Zan did that, but it is interesting to me that this was the culmination of such a long-term food stealing storyline throughout the season, with the Future Life bars, with Keon, with Paul eating too much. Like, it's been so inbuilt to the season, again, champion illusions with the sugarcane. But I would agree with you, Mike, that it didn't have all of the ugliness the champions did through some of those incidents, through a couple of these characters, through some of the incidents that we saw. So for me, it was fun. It was mostly lighthearted, usually through Chappies, but it was verging on a little bit ugly for me when like Tyson swore at Chappies and he says like he had no respect. I was like, hey, simmer down, guys. It's been a lot. But mostly I found it really fun, and the culmination of so many storylines in terms of the food ceiling, in terms of Santini finally playing an idol correctly after all the drama she's had with idols, she made it work. In terms of Wyra and the cooking and leaving with the rice and how that's been her role in the tribe, like so many things came to a really, you know, poetic, maybe storytelling point. And I really like that in the episode, that it was so character focused and so story focused.
And even again, going back to Tyson, let's remember, I believe he's the first confessional of the season, right? Being like, oh, I can't wait to, you know, cut everyone's throat and not even care a lick. And here we have 30 days later, right, him caring a lick and then some, him and swearing at Chappies for taking a lick, basically saying, like, go F yourself, which is wild, just absolutely bananas. I love this conflict so much, because it really was, you know, we've talked about how, yeah, tribal council can be a little eye-rolly sometimes, right? Palesa, I believe you quite literally eye-rolled at tribal council in your season about how, you know, sometimes you're just sort of going through the motions. God, Nico Panaggio had an incredible episode. Maybe his best episode ever as a host, between everything with the currency, between the bath. And here, he knew, like, this car is going fast enough. I don't need to give it more gas. Let me just, like, ease up on the brake and let this car roll down the hill. And all he needed to do is just sit back and let these people talk. And it led to just some brilliant, brilliant stuff.
Yeah, I mean, ironically, as Judge Judy Nico, he should have kept the gavel from the auction because he really needed it. And he had to litigate some stuff that we'll talk about from a production perspective when they're literally bringing in the rules to try and get immunity stripped from Chappies, which was definitively the plan. And that's a really tough one. Like, Palesa, had you ever seen anything like this in playing? Or I guess, yeah, I mean, we've never seen anything like it. So is this something that is an unusual thing for people to go to production to try and use production and the rules in this way to get ahead in gameplay?
I think I'm also really seeing it for the first time. And I know Mike was saying, you know, it was really bizarre how things sort of, you know, what went out of proportion in terms of how far the argument really went and the things that people started saying. But from personal experience, it's actually not that far blown out of proportion. And if anyone can remember, me and Tom's biggest fight that season, which was the one just before we had won a challenge together, was over a fish. we fought over fish, and the fish wasn't the problem. It's really just the underlying factors. And there's so much that you have to hold in, as you said, with your emotions, everything you're going through. And once you get into a place where this fight is, you know, bringing everything out, you're actually taking, you know, all this sort of held back anger and aggression that you've been holding inside of you, and it sort of just burst out. So yes, we also fought over, but it wasn't really about fish. And I felt this way as well here. And other than, you know, Nico being Judge Judy, I felt like he was more of like a school teacher, and with kids on the playground fighting. And, you know, the teacher, everyone wants to tell the teacher, you know, telltale the teacher and tell them, this is what this one did to me. This was that, what that one did to me. And Nico must be the teacher and say, you know, you, everyone go to detention. You know, so
yeah.
It was, I've never seen, you know, any castaway try to use production and say, what is it that you're going to do about the rules? Because to be honest, Survivor really is a little bit of a rule-breaking place, you know. And yes, every game has rules, and it's important for the rules to be adhered to. But I don't think it was that deep, to be honest. And, you know, they said themselves as well, like everybody did something. And I think that's what Nico actually showed us so well, right after he let them do their thing and, you know, go out at each other. And when he finally got a chance to speak, he just really put things in perspective and say, what has your role been? And everyone has had a role in the same exact way. And even though the outcomes were different, there's really nothing I think production could have done in terms of if they were going to strip Chappies of that immunity. Does that mean they were going to strip those who had, you know, a bribe and gave everyone meat of something as well? What were going to be the repercussions if everyone was in the wrong? So I think for this one, it was right for Nico to actually just let it pass and say, yeah, we all played our part and we're going to let it go, especially when it comes to food, because food is one of the resources in Survivor that everyone tries to preserve as best as possible. There were similar things that we had done in our season two, even though it wasn't blown, you know, out of proportion to this end. But I think everybody's always happy when everyone gets to eat something. But no one is ever happy when it's only a certain few people or one person eating without them.
Yeah, I do think like reward stealing is a bit of a like, it's not okay, but it is okay thing, where production like maybe doesn't encourage it, maybe it's technically not allowed, but they're kind of into it because it encourages contestants to be sneaky and entertaining, and it's always been a part of the show, you know, way back when Aaliyah's bringing back like half eaten mince in my cases, like this is a part of the show, and clearly like the contestants who create the culture of the show had set a precedent where this is something that's being done, and it was done by everyone at the last reward. So to put it on Chappies, it, you know, it feels unfair. And in terms of like the Dobbers, which is Australian for Tattletales.
Oh, like, yeah, I've watched Bluey, Shannon. Yeah. I actually just watched an episode where they talk about dobbing. So that's like the one piece of Australian vernacular I've gathered.
Right. So the difference between dobbing to a teacher and dobbing to Nico, the host, is that Nico is part of production. He's the host. Like, you've been talking about this on camera since before the immunity challenge. Like, Nico knows, like, production knows if this was a real problem, they would have stripped him of it before the immunity challenge, and we wouldn't even be having this conversation. So clearly they're okay with it, and you don't need to go tell Nico, guys, because you're talking about it on camera like it's something that exists in the show that they're completely aware of. You're not giving him any new information he has an earpiece in at all times.
Yeah, so this is the thing, is that I think this episode, to Pelessa's point, confirms a rule that was pretty much like always kind of implicit in Survivor across all franchises, but hasn't been explicitly stated until this point, which is, to your point, production kind of turning a blind eye to being like, well, you know, you're not supposed to take stuff, but if you want to sneak it back, that's fine. And look, maybe some people feel like, I know there certainly has been some stuff coming out this week of like, well, no, it was explicitly stated that Chappies can't take food from the auction, so he should have been punished because he broke a rule. Here's the thing. Survivor is not fair in many, many ways. And Survivor is also a TV show. And no matter who is running the show, chances are, if it's going to produce a fun TV moment, production is going to let it slide, even if it is a bit of a rule break. as an example, let's go back to one of the very first things Russell Hance does in his very first season. A rule is you're not allowed to destroy people's personal property. What does he do on night one? Burns Jason's socks. Now, ordinarily, that could be something that might get you kicked off the show because, again, it's a rule break. But the show looks at it and is like, yeah, this is pretty funny. Like, yeah, this'll suck for Jason, but like, I think we're going to let this one slide. And I think that's the thing, is that while there are maybe hard and fast rules in Survivor, there is a bit of wiggle room when it comes to, okay, whether it's benefiting everybody, like we saw stealing the Bri and bringing it back for everyone, or if it's for the sake of just like creating, you know, entertainment at not a huge detriment to anyone in particular, then we'll let this happen. And I'm sure, you know, any Survivor production would not want to eject a player or strip immunity from a player for a rule break. So I think more often than not, you're good. There have been so many instances where things have happened, right? There's rumors about, like, in Survivor Micronesia, James and Alexis snuck into a production camp. Of course, there's the whole, like, Weasel Woo thing, right? That he was listening in on confessionals. Contestants break rules all the time. And I hate to, you know, break it to the daubers out there, but production does not want to punish these people unless they're really backed into a corner to do so.
Yeah, I mean, they especially don't care when it's something like he took his own sweets from a reward, he took a bribe for everyone, like, compared to what people were, like, literally breaking in production to steal food, this is nothing. So, you know, you're allowed to do whatever you want. Wyrda takes the rice. If she gets, it is tribe rice, she gets voted out with the rice, they don't have rice. That sucks, but she just stole the rice from them. Like, if Zan had, you know, gone ahead with his strategy, if Bookley had been voted out, she would have taken the flint. They would have had no flint, and they would have had to deal with that. But that's, like, part of the game and part of the entertainment of the TV product, and that's what makes it really interesting. And I do think, you know, I went on the Winners of War podcast a couple of weeks ago and said, tribal can be a little boring. What are we here for? It's all just, you know, theater. This was really fun. This was, like, great theater. You know, this is what theater is usually like. It's so entertaining. And there was a lot of parts of this. Like, Palesa, what did you make of Wyrda stealing the rice? Chappie's hilariously replaces it with sand. Now she's mad that she has sand instead of the rice that she stole, but she thinks is hers. Like, there's a lot of layers to this. So how are you kind of breaking down that other stealing accusation?
It was really, really entertaining. It was really funny, you know. Firstly, because, I mean, everybody does it, especially the part, I mean, I think in every season, and even though it's not always part of the show, there is always going to be a point where somebody wins a reward and brings a little bit of something for everyone to share. And, you know, to be honest, I have done it during my the episode I won with Tom, and we got to, you know, eat tapas and have some wine and, you know, sleep on a bed. We brought back a little bit of, you know, those tapas, you know, edibles for the rest of our tribe. And even when we won the chocolate at Merge, we still had a lot of, like, the chocolate treats with us. And then we brought it with us to Merge to share with everyone now that we're at Merge. It happens all the time because food, like I said, is really central to a lot of the things that happen on Survivor. And the sharing of food and the giving of food is actually one of the things that can even, you know, bring you closer and, you know, get you to have alliances with people. So it's really central to making sure that, you know, people, you want to be liked. So you do that for the whole team. You know, contrary to that, in the same breath, taking from the challenge, taking sweets, taking a bri, I think is actually not as bad had they found out that he's actually been eating tribe rice all along. And stealing from the tribe itself and the food that sustains the tribe is actually, I think, the bigger of the illegalities, not within production, but just for the tribe. Like, this is the food that we need to eat to sustain ourselves, to win challenges, to just keep going, because it's actually the hardest thing to be starving on the island. And that's one of the hardest parts of Survivor, is the starvation. So actually stealing from the tribe is the bigger, I think, of the two devils, I would say, than stealing to feed either yourself with sweets or stealing to, you know, to feed the rest of the tribe, whatever goodies were given during, you know, the reward. But yeah, I mean, everybody did a little bit of wrong. And I think, as Mike said, production It's a good thing that production lets go some of this stuff because they know it's going to turn into a great TV moment. And the reason why people watch Survivor is because we want great TV moments. So just imagine if all that little part of the suite didn't happen with Chappies. Were we going to get the episode that we got? Were we going to get the dramatic tribal council that we got? Probably not, because that's what makes great TV. It's the little indiscretions that blow up and be get blown out of proportion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chappies was the star of this episode,
yeah.
No question. And I think to your point, Shannon, I could absolutely understand why being out on the island, like why Warda and Tyson were so angry at the situation and him in particular, because to Pelessa's point, like if he snuck sweets, yeah, it's a really faulty argument in my opinion to be like, well, he only won the challenge because of the sweets, when like Tyson had a challenge advantage and he lost.
Also, Chappies won by like quite a lot. Like, how can you quantify what the sweets would do? But I really don't feel it was because
of the sweets. And they also all had the opportunity to bid on the sweets and eat them too, right?
They also all had the opportunity to take their food home.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So like,
pocket their food.
So it's very much that sort of is not an argument to hang your hat on. But yeah, to Pelessa's point, I think obviously the point that riles them up much more is that he has, been sneaking this rice. God, what a fantastic runner this entire week. When we start the episode with, I believe it's actually after a bit of an argument between Santini and Warda, which again is going to be a big indicator of what's going to happen in this episode. We get this like first little hint of Chappies stealing rice. He's sneaking away in the middle of the night. And I'm like, where is this going? I did not expect this to, already get paid off later on in the episode. I thought this might have just been like a small thing that we might get a few episodes from now. And what I love so much about Chappies in this episode is, God, is he sloppy about it. Like, he is such a great merge of Tony and Tyson, in that Tyson obviously had the coconut bandits and the food stealing was a big part of Blood versus Water. But he has the messiness of Tony, in that he is not sneaky about it whatsoever. How do you go cook a meal for yourself at Chappies Diner and leave the pot sitting out the next morning? It's like he wants to get caught. How do you swap the rice like Indiana Jones with a bag of sand behind Warda's back, but like have a different color bag so that she immediately knows that you took the rice? It's absolutely phenomenal to me that Chappies does all this for entertainment, for the love of the game. But also at the same time, it immediately blows up in his face because everyone's like, we see what you're doing. You're not being underhanded about this whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about this being a character episode, Tyson's emotionality, Kieran going so game heavy as always. I thought it was a bit of a return to form for Santini as well. Obviously, she's always an amazing character, but in her game, seeing all sides of it. But Chappies, as such a huge character consistently, this was peak Chappies from a character perspective, because when you look at stealing food as a move, you're like, all right, well, there's like risk and reward here. Like, obviously, extreme risk. If you get found out, people will hate you. Possibly you'll lose jury votes. But also there's the net gain of like you'll be stronger for challenges, and he kind of does need to beast out. I get that, but the sloppiness, there's no defense of that. And I think possibly, like, I mean, I've got two justifications. My first is he was sugar drunk. That's, I have to believe. I've seen Chappies actually drunk, and he seemed a little similar to that in this episode for me. My second actual one is, I think Chappies felt a little untouchable in this episode. Like, he knows worst case scenario he's leaving. He knows he's got a good chance at any challenge, leaving Tribal Council with the Tribal Council pass that expired in this episode, or he wins the challenge. Either way, like, you might want to get rid of him now, but you absolutely can't. I think he kind of felt like, take your shot, I'm fine, I'm going to eat, I'm going to do what I want. And he got a little, drunk on the sugar and the power, leaves the pot out there, which is a completely crazy move. Then for him and Santini to defend it so, so well, the Tribal Council, like, I feel like they definitively did win. Obviously, it's easy to win when you're right. And they were right on all counts, obviously right that the precedent has been set in reward stealing and no one cares. Like, obviously, if the production is watching you do it, you're allowed to do it. And also the rice, clearly, Warda has stolen tribe rice. You've just stolen it back. You are like Robin Hood in this instance, stealing the tribe rice back for the tribe. So they were completely right in that way. So I feel like it was just like such a risky thing, the whole game, for him to play like this. But I feel like I'm still going to end up giving him chizzy points. Like, he definitively carried out whatever the hell he was trying to do here. Like, I think it went more okay than it should have, considering how much literal fire he was playing with.
Well, I want to ask you, Palesa, about what does this mean for his jury chances?
Yes,
now, look,
I've been saying
the past couple of weeks of like, look, people might feel this way. But at the end of the day, Palesa did vote for Tom. So anything is possible in the game of Survivor. But if you're a jury member and you watch what carries out at Tribal Council, I guess we'll start with like the chappy side of things. If you find out that someone has been stealing food to sort of like feed themselves away from the tribe, do you have respect for them? Do you judge them more harshly because of that?
I think, you know, for the jury, the jury's mind actually really, you know, it's really transitional, right? Because in every episode, you're hearing about the things that are taking place in that day. But at the end of Tribal Council, the outcome really outweighs a lot, you know? So yeah, maybe you might lose respect for Chappies for, you know, taking some, you know, feeding himself with sweets before a challenge. And to be honest, he probably would have won the challenge anyway. But, you know, maybe it gave him a little bit extra energy. Maybe you could lose respect for him for, you know, stealing tribal rice and, you know, being selfish in the sense that he gets more food than everyone else in the tribe. And for a jury member who knows what it feels like to be on the island and to be starving, yeah, you might feel you might lose a little bit of respect for people for different kind of reasons. But what is the determining factor? I think at the end of the episode, for me, if I was a juror there, the determining factor was Chappies just did what we all couldn't do. You've just, you know, made a major move and broken down the major players in the game and the front runners of the game. And now you've created sort of an even base for the game to be played again without majorities. So that is that for me would be the determining factor. And I know not all jurors will think like me, because people will like to think, I mean, we see the you know, the reactions of their jury, their faces, the disgust, the things that they say in their post-tribal interviews when they've been kicked out and how terrible they feel and all of that. But for someone like me, I really don't care how I feel about you. I want to know how I feel about the game that you're playing. And whether I like you or not is besides the fact. The fact is we're here to play Survivor. And were you playing Survivor? Did you actually get to make moves that changed the path of the game? Absolutely. And Chappies, that's exactly what Chappies and Santini did this week. They were able to steer the game in a different direction. And whether you respect them or not as people, you can respect them differently as Survivor players.
I mean, to go to what you're saying in terms of actually watching what was happening in Ponderosa, like, they, from a gameplay perspective, firstly, Zamba love that Chappies are screwing over Vuna, because the only reason they got so snowed at the merge was because Vuna didn't all vote out Chappies. Like, they thought it was going to be like a unanimous vote with a small split to take Chappies out. They love that they were like, you should have voted him out. Yeah. Now he's like your demise in the game. So they're loving
that. It's very reminiscent of like heroes versus villains, right? Mm-hmm. Where the heroes are like, well, Sandra, you were really anti-villain and we hate the villains. The villains took us out. So like, we really like you here.
But even beyond that, the fact that they were like, we told you should have got rid of Chappies, which like at the time was definitely not the right move for anyone in Vuna. They'd all be getting picked off as we speak, but like they're definitely clinging to, and now he's like, you know, the reason you're all losing, and they love that. So that's going well from a gameplay perspective. I think in terms of the food stealing, like, there's been a lot of food stealing. Like, Sean is talking about it, and he says, and Rainier, they're kind of talking about how if he can kind of give strategic reasoning for stealing, like, they'll be fine with it. But if he was just stealing for stealing's sake, they're not as into it. It's like, Sean, you were part of a, you know, a future life bar stealing plan that happened earlier in the season. Like, surely this jury will have fun with it. He's obviously got like a really big advocate in Inesu. I think for the jurors that are out of the game, surely they can just kind of enjoy this and the fact that he and Santini did definitively like win this argument. I think from a juror's perspective, my concern is for the people that are still in the game who will become jurors, who he's like stealing rice from. So like, Warada obviously enticed him. That's like not going very well for him in terms of his jury prospects. Nicole even, like, maybe that's someone who would have been neutral, but now is like burned by the fact that he was stealing food. So that to me is a concern. But if you're a juror having to maybe give a vote for Chappies, it is just so disparate. It's like, what kind of player is stealing food from the tribe, but also like save their lives, like legitimately save their lives? Like, Nico points it out. He's like, he also was the reason you got to eat more last week at the spaghetti reward. Like, he's just such an extreme in every way character. Like, I don't envy jurors trying to work out their feelings about it, because it's a lot. But I think there's enough there that, like, surely, especially for like, you know, the fun members of this cast, someone like a Sean, like, surely you're kind of having fun with the fact that this is hilarious and you like it.
I would imagine so. And also, it really is such a layup, right? If you're saying, okay, I'll vote for Chappies if he gets to final tribal council and says, I did it strategically. Yeah, no, duh, he's going to say,
yeah, there was no strategy at all. I was just hungry. Like, no, like, you know, it's all part of the game. You know, he was trying to win challenges. Like, it's easy strategy. It's not even hard.
Yeah. Jean is maybe the only person I think who would get to a final tribal council and be like, ah, oh, no, I did it just because I wanted to.
Yeah.
So I think it's fairly easy. You know, my thoughts about the jury have gone back so much back and forth. Like, until I watched the Ponderosa, coming out of this episode, I thought, wow, Chappie's just really sunk himself in front of the jury, right? Like, just with the reactions he was bringing, like you said, Shannon, I really have a lot of worry considering that it was seven people left. You know, five of them are going to be making up the jury, four or five. That might be four or five guaranteed votes against Chappies for what he did. And that's not great.
That would be really uncool of Smash. He saved his life and Smash was stealing future life bars.
It's what have you done for me lately in that regard? But, you know, and he saved him from the tribal council, which we'll talk about. Yeah. But I do think that, you know, time's not necessarily going to heal all wounds, but I think it does help. We talked about this with Dom and Wendell, right? That like the first five people out of the game in Ghost Island didn't really experience a lot of maybe some of that more personal stuff that Dom was bringing in. So like they were fine voting for him, whereas the second five people experienced more of that. And so they voted for Wendell. Like it really does depend when you end up going out of the game. But I mean, something that I am willing to sort of plant my flag on in this, and maybe it's, again, it's wishful thinking, because I would love, 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 love this season to somehow end with the Saint-Denis Chappies final two. I feel like it's gotta, because Warda finishes her final words by, you know, talking about everything with her energy being gone, giving the rice to Tyson and Nicole, and then saying, hey, you know, I don't want Saint-Denis and Chappies gameplay to get to the end, but if it does, I'm going to make the most fair decision. This is my edit brain. I feel like that wouldn't be in the edit unless the two of them make it to the end.
No, I don't say though.
I don't know. I just feel like if that's the case, then I've been going back and forth as to like, could Saint-Denis actually get, we've been talking about the jury goat stuff, but could she get more votes because of this stuff that Chappies did? I'm not entirely sure until I watch this Ponderosa, but that's what's been germinating in my brain, is I feel like we're getting so much, and maybe again it's sort of like the way your season ended, Palessa, with these two people that the jury's like, we gotta vote for one of these people, really? All right, I guess we have to.
I mean, at least one of those people was saving their lives. You know, I think, and even Saint-Denis, like, I think Saint-Denis came out looking really good in this tribal council. Like, obviously she correctly uses the idol, she idols out who she wants to idol out, and she gets to win the argument without even stealing food, which is a bonus. But like, in terms of the eyes of the jury, you know, there's a lot of sides that are arguing here. Like, the viewers looking poorly at Warda and Tyson in this. I feel like the viewers definitely took the side of Saint-Denis and Chappies again, because I think they were pretty definitively right here. But Palessa, what would you think for someone like Tyson? Like, he's been such a big player. He's made huge moves. Like, do you think that this, like, kind of petty, it was petty, but I think it was desperate. I mean, from the voting confessionals of Kieran, Tyson and Warda, they seem to really know that Saint-Denis not going with this like half-baked plan to not play her idol. Like, they know that it's done. I think it was just pure desperation. But does this look really petty for someone to come up in tribal council and say, Tyson, remember when you like dobbed on me to the teacher? That's not gameplay.
It definitely was very petty. You know, I mean, the whole beginning part of this tribal council was petty, petty, petty. And that's why I said I would compare it to actually a playground scene rather than a court scene, because it felt like, you know, kids sort of just like going out at each other and all trying to tell the teacher something. And like, teacher, please do something. And whatever you do, let it be in my favor, you know? Mm. So it was definitely very petty. But I think, you know, Tyson, I really like Tyson. I really like Tyson because, you know, he was one of the people that, you know, changed the game and made sure that things got a little bit more extreme and people started playing a little bit more feistier. But also, I think he started getting a bit of a big head. And that's one of the very that's a very big and dangerous thing in Survivor, because Survivor needs you to be hungry. It needs you to, you know, want to win. It needs you to think that you're in danger, because it's those danger instincts that actually kick you into survival mode. And, you know, once you get relaxed and complacent and think that everything is going your way, you lose a little bit of those instincts, you know, those fight or flight instincts that allow you to actually, you know, get your head straight and, you know, strategize in a great way. And this, I think, showed really well with the Chappies and Santini move, where they felt like they were in danger and this is the time that they need to do something to save their lives. And they did it, you know, so amazingly. So you need those instincts. You need those instincts to keep you on your toes and to have you thinking as clearly as possible. But once you get complacent and think that, you know, you've got this, you're on top of your game, you're giving other people, those who feel in danger, an advantage over you, an instinctive advantage to say, I should actually be saving myself and doing something. So they didn't do anything because they thought things were going to happen their way as they usually have. And this was just literally like one of those petty things that say, well, take away his immunity because, you know, I deem it fit to be so. And unfortunately, it didn't work that way because that's not how the game works. I think now we're going to see even better from the likes of Tyson because now their lives are in danger and they're going to get back that feeling of fight or flight and, you know, they're really fighting hard to regain their power and regain their positions in the game.
It's a good point because let's remember that, yeah, Tyson and Kieran had a bit of a rough pre-merge. Tyson did have to play that idol. But really, since the Dino vote, they have always been in the power position.
With a lot of work.
Yeah. But I think to Pelez's point, like if you spend 2 weeks on the top, we saw this with the Zambas at the merge, right? Mm-hmm. Hey, I feel comfortable now. Tyson's in confessional, right? Being like, you can't blindside the king of blindsides, off with your head. Mm-hmm. And look, Tyson has sort of always had that braggadocious nature to him in confessionals, which I love. But I can totally see how in this case, right, you feel like, open and shut, 5v2, that, you know, when this happens, it causes that anger to rise up among you. But I could also see why it's not necessarily coming off good for him at with the jurors as well. Warda didn't come off great, but she is, you know, no longer in the game. I do wonder if Tyson makes it to the end. And this was talked about, I think, a lot in Champions, right? This idea of like, well, you had this, you controlled the game, but you had this emotional reaction. How do we reconcile that? I do wonder if Tyson makes it to the end, will this be a moment that will sort of get brought up? Mm-hmm. And to Pelez's point, I also think that this is going to light a bit of a fire under Tyson specifically, again, to be like, all right, guys, rested on my laurels. Now my closest ally is gone, or one of my closest allies. Let me start hustling again.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that there's a little bit of levity in Tyson's emotionality because he's been so unemotional. So I feel like people are just like, we knew you were human, Tyson. You know, it's not maybe as negative and just like a little bit of fun for them. But I do think hopefully if he were to get to a final tribal council, he could point to like the major moves that he's had and just being like, I was completely desperate in that moment trying to save my closest ally and people would maybe forgive it. But I do think they've left Tyson in the game who, you know, these are the two major questions that we got, I think, through the week, which was A, their target to take out Warda instead of Tyson, and we can get all our thoughts on that. And then also to send Smash back to camp so that he couldn't vote or be voted for rather than sending Santini back to camp so that she could not play her idol and keep it for the final six. So, Mike, where did you fall, I guess, on the decision, firstly, to send Smash back to camp?
I 100% agree with it. And look, I know that there is some stuff right about, like you said, send Santini back there. She doesn't need to play her idol. You can play at the final six. But you have to sort of look forward as to what would have happened had you done that. And what happens is super simple. The three vote out Anella. It's clear as day because Nicole is safe. Those three are not breaking anytime soon. You could try to be like, hey, Smash, you have to vote alongside me because then we can, you know, they're turning on you, do something. But he doesn't have the numbers. Only it would be him, he and Chappie versus those three. And so they're outruled any day of the week. And then once you do move on from that, you have an idol, but you are facing this 3-2-1 scenario where there still is this formidable trio that, let's be candid, only have to make it through one more vote and then they have the game on lock. I would much, much, much rather break up this trio that I've attempted to do so the past two times and finally get to do so now and face a 2-2-2 scenario where, yes, Anella could flip over to Tyson and Kieran, but now at least the game is a little more wide open versus, okay, let me keep this, you know, the tightest group in the game together for one more round and just pick off another straggler. I think it was a no-brainer decision personally.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, and it seems like a bit of a contentious decision online. I do think at the beginning that that was their plan. That's what they're talking about, and we don't really get to see why it changes. And they're saying that hopefully Nicole would break off because she'd be mad that they voted out Smash. It's like, well, you would have left Smash there to die, like knowing explicitly that that's going to happen. So I think she'd probably be more angry with you, wanting to attach herself to a three rather than go to a, you know, possible tie. Who knows what happens with Immunity Island. But you are also there with an idol and staring down the fact that if she does go with them, like, and, you know, they do give up and go at Immunity Island, it's also 4-2 and they can split. So for someone like Chappie, it's like, you're now, you know, 100% going home rather than maybe 99%, because if Santini is safe next week. So I do think that, you know, I think break up the three every single time. But Palesa, what did you think about here? Because it really does become, would you rather have the three in the game and have an idol or break up the three but use your idol to do it?
I think, you know, everything was played out really well for this one. And I think the play of, you know, using Santini's idol rather than her keeping it and maybe Smash being voted out this episode might have been, I don't know if it was intentional in the sense of because it could gain them favor with Smash after this episode. And, you know, Smash could potentially want to work with them and Nicole to do a 4-2 against Tyson and or if it was just, you know, if it was unintentional and they didn't really think about it that far, but they really just wanted to split up the three. So splitting up the three essentially was the best decision because they had the power in the numbers, whereas everybody else are in groups of pairs of two, and they had the most numbers. And now it's sort of an even playing field. But it could also might work in their favor because it could gain them favor with Anella in saying that you guys saved my life. And maybe I owe you guys one now. But yeah, I don't know. With Chappie and Santini, you never really know how far they're thinking in the game because it always seems like all these last minute decisions. And, you know, it's so entertaining and funny to watch because sometimes it feels like scrambling. But this time the scrambling actually, did right by them and they made the right decisions this particular time. And they're really an awkward pair, to be honest. I never imagined at the beginning of the season that I would put them together as a pair, but they're doing really well. I never even imagined Santini actually getting this far in the game, which is something I'm pleasantly surprised about because she didn't really seem like that kind of player in the beginning, but she's actually proved herself to be quite central to the entire storyline and central to the game right now.
Something else that I think was really smart of them doing this is let's go back to something that Smash said last episode, right? The whole my move versus their move in terms of perception from the jury. No matter what you say about this tribal council, taking out Warda was Chappie's and Santini's move, right? This is something that they can specifically say. This was a trio that nobody could break up, but we were able to do so. Yes, we had to use a couple of advantages to do it, but we were able to get that done. I think that is something that can be a much bigger resume booster than like, well, we escaped elimination this one time and Anella got voted out and then we used the idol the next time. Like, this is something they can definitively attach to themselves in the eyes of the jury. And considering, to the point that Shannon made before, how sort of like anti-Vuna majority the jury is at this point, I think it's actually a really good move to come across in the eyes of the jury. Should the stars align and they make that final two, they're able to sort of write that move to their resumes as, or put it in their story as, this is what we were able to do together.
Yeah, I mean, it's really rare that the three of us do agree on all, like, we all agree on this because the internet seems, like, completely divided over it. But I do think even, like, especially with the Immunity Island dynamics, you can't even say, okay, keep your idol because Chappie's has such a good chance of winning Immunity, we'll both be safe because either he's going to win Immunity and then he will send her to Immunity Island anyway and they're both safe, or he doesn't win and at that point they would have the numbers to split and he would go home. So I really like the move, but I think maybe why people don't like it is the second part of it, is the fact that they use an idol to get rid of Warda. Does this move seem better to everyone if they break up the three and they get rid of Tyson? Because for me, I think yes. Like, I think that's, I mean, I like it anyway. I like breaking up the three regardless. But I think if you go with Tyson, like, Tyson's close with Smash. He's clearly a bigger physical threat. And Chappie's, like, physical role in this game is becoming massive. He's a bigger jury threat, social threat, strategic threat. Like, he seems closer to Kieran as well, which is something that Wada said in the exit as well. Like, it really feels like a no-brainer. Like, I think what we're seeing is that Santini didn't want to be around Wired anymore. They have that fight. She's like, I'm literally going to write her name down every time. She does say to us that she's closer with Nicole, which is not a dynamic we've seen. So she thinks that that maybe will tie them together. But surely leaving like Wilder and Smash in the game is great for you. Like, that's so divisive compared to Tyson, who does not, you know, hasn't had major conflict that we've seen with either of the Zumbas and is so close to Smash. So, Palesa, did you see this as strategic or emotional? And did you agree with it in terms of Wilder being the target?
I think it was definitely emotional because, as you said, Tyson would have actually been the best of the three, as you said, to get rid of, especially now when you had a guarantee that you could actually remove one person from those three, and he would have been the best one to get rid of. If you're thinking about winning the game and your possibilities of winning against someone at the final tribal council, Tyson would be that person. So, I mean, you know, Survivor is a very emotional game because sometimes you just don't want to, you know, be sleep in a shelter with somebody anymore because you've just had that, you know, just had enough of this person. And so those emotions, and sometimes these are the kind of things that even as Survivor players, you don't think about at the time. You don't think about the fact, am I making this decision emotionally or strategically? But the one thing for sure that you know in your heart is that you don't want to be around this person anymore. So I think it from Santini's end, it really was an emotional decision, and it wasn't thought through strategically in terms of who would be the best of the three to get rid of for this particular one when you have a guarantee that you have the decision making in getting rid of someone. So yeah, definitely an emotional decision, but it is an emotional game after all, because you cannot take away, you cannot strip away the castaways of their emotions and their feelings. They're a big driving factor in a lot of decisions that are made on Survivor and with the jury as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, this it's become abundantly clear in this episode, right, that Santini won the battle of the targets here. Mm. Like, Chappies, I think, had every reason to target Tyson, but Santini provided the argument here to get rid of Wilder. And as we sort of found out throughout this season, right, if you want to get Santini to work with her, you sort of go with what she says. That being said, I could see her rationale a bit. If she feels like Wilder is someone that she could never work with, as opposed to someone like Tyson. Like Tyson, she is like joking around with him, right? He says when Warda's name comes up, like, okay, my name didn't come up for once. And she's like, you know, punching him on the shoulder. Like, it seems like they have a much chummier relationship than Wilder, who the two of them were getting in an argument in circle time, say nice things about Inesu, may she rest in peace, like at the very beginning of the episode. And so maybe she thinks there's more of a social out to her possibly working with Tyson and someone like Wilder, who she would never work with. But let's also look back to the fact of at the merge, Wilder was the target of the Zumbas because they said that she was a social threat. She was much more threatening than I think the edit was saying. I think what a lot of us are making assessments by is that I do agree there are merits of really getting rid of Tyson from a positional perspective. But I would not be surprised if our judgments were clouded because of what we've seen from Warda in the edit, right? How she's getting into arguments with people. I would also not be surprised if there's actually some like common knowledge back at camp of, okay, despite her being argumentative, you know, Warda is someone who's playing a strong game and could do well in front of the jury, that there is some merit to getting rid of her as well. I think there's a lot of people that are like, Warda was a goat. Why would you get rid of her? I don't think she was a goat necessarily. The way she was coming across to us, maybe, but I could imagine out there on the island, I do not think she was drawing dead at the time she was voted out.
But like, what are we analyzing in that? Like, we're analyzing, you know, I guess her relationship with Chappies and Santini have been more negative and they're the ones making the decision. But like someone like Smash, I mean, Tyson doesn't have that on his record. These relationships, these like negative relationships that I think were really not be jury votes for him. And then even beyond that, like it's for me like beyond the jury, because you can't really think about it as much. We definitely got a lot of questions about like go with, you know, what we perceive as the GOAT versus someone who's more threatening. But for me, it's not even at that point. Like, you're at the final seven, you're in the minority, you're only safe because you're both literally, you know, immune at this tribal council. That to me is like, you have to get there first. Even the fact that Tyson is more physically dominant than Wilder to me should be enough. Even the fact that he's more connected, like, I do understand that you feel he could be more connected to you, but I just don't see Santini and Chappies making it through this game by going back to Vuno, by working with it. Like, they're going to have to fight through, maybe with advantages, immunity wins, you know, working with Zombat points, trying to pull in votes. And, like, Tyson has been proven to be better at all those things in terms of, like, if they fight another idol, I would back Tyson to find that more than I would back Wirda. So I think he's, like, more competition for them when they're not in that great a spot right now. And they're, like, up against it and they're fighting against it. And he's more threatening through at least that part of the game before you even get to the jury.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree that, again, I think on paper, Tyson is the person to get rid of. I just don't think it was a slam dunk decision like people were alluding to. I think our opinions have maybe been a bit more colored as to like our own opinions of Wirda and whether or not we would have voted for her. But I would not be surprised if after the game, people are saying like if it's a Tyson Wirda final tribal council, I would not be surprised if she gets some votes because she is someone who also was in the line of fire, right? She was nearly voted out at the merge had Tyson not played the necklace on her. She was nearly voted out at that Sean vote if Santini and Inesu had flipped. So I think that, you know, Santini has her reasons to do what she does. Of course, I feel like I've been doing this every week, but Palesa, I want to get your thoughts on Santini, who, like you said, has become like the most important person in the game. You know, as a former player yourself, how do you look at someone like that? You know, how would you feel having to play with someone like her?
Like I said, man, I didn't expect Santini to get this far. But I think, you know, she's actually very very socially aware, because she has been from the beginning the kind of person who has been accepted to actually sort of play double agent. And I don't know why people have allowed her to do that for so long, because her edit from the very start was her playing double agent for absolutely everyone from the beginning of the season. So I don't know why they've always allowed her, sort of given her the power to be on any side she chooses to be on, and always being the decision maker in terms of, you know, being the middleman and being able to pick which side she votes with each and every time. But she's been really lucky in that regard, and perhaps strategic, even though the edit hasn't really shown more of that, the fact that she's been quite strategic with it. But maybe she is quite strategic in saying that she knows that she can play double agent really well, and she knows that she was able to sort of gel in with different you know, people, and they were able to sort of count on her for a vote, or even go to her for a vote when they felt threatened in any way. So she got this far now, and she's starting to make some good moves. And even though they're not all sort of thought through and might be a little bit emotional with the Wirda versus Tyson being voted out for this particular episode, now, even though her life is still in danger, I wonder if she is going to continue being that strategic player and actually finding, worming her way out of this one, because I feel like she's the person with nine lives, even though she's always been like one of those people that you could have voted out from the very first episode. However, nobody has ever thought to really follow through to do so and get rid of her. So is that the time to start doing it now and really thinking about getting rid of her, because now she's upset the people that she's now on the island with? Or is she now in a position of power to say, I know what I'm doing and I'm going to continue making big moves with Chappies going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think she has a bit of a shield now in Chappies. I felt like she was shielding Chappies for a while, and that she, I thought, was running the game, and he wasn't running the game. Like, he got left out of a lot of votes in the pre-merge, and she was protecting him in ways, and I felt she was protecting him there. And now you have to get rid of Chappies if you can, if he's vulnerable, because he's such an immunity threat. So I think that shield is a good thing for her. But I also thought, like, she was back in form here in this episode. Like, right from the beginning, even though Kieran is immediately onto her, and I thought that was great for him too, but, like, to come in pretending she doesn't, you know, didn't know that the vote was going to go that way because she didn't vote last episode. Like, yes, it was immediately seen by Kieran, but just using her emotionality strategically, being aware of how she's perceived and how she can kind of put that in motion for her own gain. I was like, all right, this is what the Santini that we know. She's not just emotional, like, everything's thought out and everything's very self-aware. And then for that to track to how much she was underestimated and using that again, as she always has done, you know, with Wirda coming and saying, like, you really don't want to play your idol wrong again. If I heard her immediately be like rolling her eyes at it and seeing straight through it, I was like, yes, Santini, like, use being underestimated. Like, they don't think that you're much smarter than they think, and you're using that, and I really like that.
Yeah, I really love the subversion of expectations here, right, where you have the trio being like, all right, our last ditch effort is to convince Santini that, you know, Kieran's going to try to play double agent against the double agent and convince Santini not to play her idol. And Santini immediately goes back to Chappie's, and they both laugh their faces off that they actually tried to talk her into it. Because, yeah, that's the thing. You can't double agent the double agent. And I guess I commend the trio for their attempts of what they really could only do. Right. I guess the only other thing would be to convince Chappie's to send Santini out so that, like you said, you vote off Smash and you survive another day. But outside of that, like, Santini was not having it whatsoever. You know, I was really happy to see her idol play here. Like we said, the first time she's played it correctly, and it was very fun to continue that storyline along. I mean, listen, plus, I don't want to bring up your own history with idols, but you have a connection with them throughout your time in the game. I mean, do you think it was a no-brainer for Santini here to play her idol in the moment? What do you sort of like, put yourself in her head at this moment? You're sitting there with an idol in a tough situation. Do you ever consider not playing it?
Well,
it's a traumatizing question.
Right, exactly. You know, bringing back my trauma. Yeah. But I think in this particular instance, she did the right thing, you know, and I think she got great advice from her sister. I think her sister might have seen my season and said, you know, don't pull a Balissa on me. Just, you know, just play it whenever you get a chance so that you stay in the game regardless. But in this particular instance, I think the strategy was great because they knew they wanted to get rid of one of the three and not Anela. So in order to do that, the only thing that they could have done was for Santini to play the idol so that Anela could be sent back home, you know, and because then it would have defeated the purpose of trying to get rid of the three had Anela stayed and they would have voted him out. So in this particular instance, the move was perfect because it actually got the outcome, the exact outcome they wanted. She wanted to get rid of Wada. And in order for her to get rid of Wada, she had to play her idol in order for them to give the tribal pass to Anela. And there was no other way because that exactly what they wanted. And this was one of the best strategic sort of, you know, outputs in saying that this is what we want and we're going to get this if we do this. And that was one of the strongest strategic decisions that they've made, both Santini and Chappie's, you know, so far. And even though they could have voted out the wrong of the three, and to be honest, Warda was not really the strongest of the three to vote out. But it seems like Kieran is playing quite like a top dog, underdog at the same time. Like, why is he not being considered? And that's actually quite a strong personality trait for him, because even though in my eyes, I feel like he's actually the person that's has been taking the lead, even over Tyson in this particular episode, because he's the one that, you know, got into conversations with Anela and convinced him to be part of him, even convinced Anela that they would definitely get rid of Wada before they would of him. And from Anela's response, it actually does seem to me that he actually had fell for it and, you know, wanted to be in a strong alliance with them. And that was Kieran's move. So, and he's actually won quite a lot of individual, you know, immunities and rewards as well. So he's actually quite strong in terms of winning immunities and, you know, physically strong as well, and knows how to get, and especially towards the end when a lot of the challenges start becoming endurance challenges, because you don't have a lot of endurance towards the end of the game. And Kieran has proven to have quite a lot of endurance and is good at winning endurance challenges. And so I think that brings out a front runner for me, even over Tyson, because it takes even more strategy to, you know, to become the one who's moving the chess pieces, but nobody's actually recognizing you as the person that's moving the chess pieces. So it doesn't put a bigger X on your back than it would someone like Tyson, who's actually quite upfront and, you know, gutsy and, you know, showing up to people and showing people that, yeah, I've got this and this is my game. So, yeah, Kieran, I think, is one to actually look out for even more than Tyson.
Yeah, I think Kieran did not necessarily have a great, like, first two thirds of an episode. But as much as it wasn't necessarily team good TV, he made the best decision by just sitting there and keeping his mouth shut during that tribal council, right? Like, let your other two allies sink their games, get into arguments. You just sit there, stare forward, and just pray that the vote turns out the way that you want to. I think that really helps wash his hands too. If there is any sort of like negative reception to Tyson, I think he just did a really tactful job in just sitting there and not doing anything and essentially allowing Tyson to sort of like talk himself into possibly a negative perception while he's able to come through and say, yeah, I didn't really get involved in any of that schoolyard drama. You know, I just sort of sat there and let it wash over me.
Well, Kieran and Smash are the two that don't really talk in Tribal Council, which I will say was the best move of the whole episode from both of them. It was the best move that anyone made, was just not talking. Like, anyone talking, I feel like, it was a negative. Even for the people who won, it was like, it was still involved. Like, it was great not to talk. But, you know, Smash has to not talk, because if the people on his side, if Warda and Tyson get their objective, which is for Chappies to be stripped of his immunity, then Chappies is going to use the Tribal Council pass on himself and Smash will go home. So he's probably like, guys, you know, I think it was fine that Chappies stole sweets. Like, keep him immune. And then for Kieran, he was playing double agent. So he's explained online that both sides did think he was going to be voting for Santini, even Santini and Chappies. At that point, they all knew the idol was going to be played. So he's really trying to keep the facade up so he can't talk, because he can't take like a public position. So I think he did really well not talking. And in terms of getting his name off the block, like, I think that he really, really earned that. Like, with Tyson, he's not voted for, and we can talk about, is it a combination of he really did that because they think he's more workable and he's earned that? Is it really just an anti-Warda thing that wasn't on him and it's just their decision, and it is that emotionality and more of a negative towards her than a positive towards Tyson? I think that you can find a percentage in that Tyson earns versus the situation versus whatever Warda's doing. But Kieran, you know, 100% gets his own name off the block, because he's the person that they explicitly think that they're working with, that they'll work with next week, that he's playing like a double agent for them, but really he's a triple agent back to Tyson. So he's doing a lot here that actively gets his name off the block. So I do think that in a losing vote, and as he says, like, the Survivor gods have really made it difficult, you know, he says something like that, within having to vote out one of the three, it's not him, it's not Tyson. He is in conversations where they're deciding who it will be, so possibly even in that he is making sure it's not Tyson, who he's closer with, as verified by Warda in the X interview. So he's probably doing a lot here to be like, if it has to be one of the three of us, like, at least let it not be me and not Tyson. So I think there's a lot of good work happening there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with Palesa that I think, I mean, especially with it just being him and Tyson, I mean, I would imagine that, you know, Santini and Chappies are probably going to go after them and vice versa if there's not Immunity Island involved, just because of everything that happened at Tribal Council. I think Santini's hopes of, hey, maybe now we can work with Tyson more so than we could with Warda, kind of went up in smoke after what happened, considering that Tyson told Chappies to shut the F up at Tribal Council. I think safe to say they're not going to work together.
Big divide. Anytime. Yeah.
Yeah, a bit of a divide. But I think that we talk about this all the time, right? That when there's a tight pair and one person is voted out, it's very unlikely that that other person is going to get immediately picked off, just because, like, they lose so much projected power when they just appear as one of a pair. Maybe that's the thing here, where Tyson and Kieran just appear as, now they're two out of three. Yes, they're a pair, but there are also two other pairs in the game as well. And so I do think that there are some outs to them right here. I think despite the fact that they lost one of their closest allies, there is still a path where they see themselves as the final two. And for Kieran's sake, he ends up losing someone that definitely would have taken Tyson to the final two over him, which ends up being a pretty good thing.
Yeah, I do think, you know, for a losing side, I think Kieran did a lot really well here, as always. You know, it was a very, very difficult one, but with three people can go, and neither one is, you know, you or Tyson, like, it was best case scenario for him in that situation. I want to talk about Warda going home here. You know, I wish he would own the rice thing that she told us about in confessional. You know, I understand not owning it in Tribal Council when it's been swapped for sand. But even in the exit, I really like that move. It's something that we talked about. And we said at the time, like, wow, you better blindside people and not have them know that they're going. Otherwise, like, yeah, take camp items for sure. Like, that's a legitimate move. Hold things hostage, like, make people scared. I really like that move. But obviously, you know, Chappies does change it right in front of her, to the point where after the whole debacle, like, all she's like, was like, what do you want now, Warda? And she's like, all I want, I just want the rice so that, like, I can give it to Tyson. Like, it was like, well, this has been definitively squashed by the ceiling and the ensuing argument, where Chappies and Santini won the argument. And I feel like I need to speak to the wider thing because, like, the drama continues a little bit through the episode and into me, where, like, I wouldn't bring it up, but she alludes to it in her exit interview. Like, she seemed really keen to chat to Mike and not me, which, honestly, I'd be the same. She blocked me on Twitter. Because, okay, so I really want to, like, get this out there and just, like, if Wyatt is listening or if someone could tell her, like, apparently what she alluded to in the interview and what I've heard is, like, she is mad that she thinks, like, I insulted her cooking, which, you know, in 30 hours of content about the season, it's not something I can say that I didn't do. But, like, I just want to say, like, I totally apologize for that, and I've obviously, like, really upset her. I can't criticize anyone's cooking. Like, I've never tried it. I'm a terrible cook. Like, cooking to me is Uber Eats. Like, I can get my mom on the podcast to corroborate that I have no right criticizing or analyzing anyone's cooking in any capacity. So, like, I hope that was all that it was and there's not any more that made her angry with me. And I just wanted to put it out there because otherwise her alluding to it in the exit would be, like, a really big non sequitur. But I'm just, yeah, wanting to apologize for upsetting her and just saying, like, I have no leg to stand on in criticizing cooking. So, like, hopefully that's okay, and you forgive me. So I don't know what I said, but I take it back, like, 1,000,000%. I have no idea what the cooking thing is.
Yeah, I mean, this is another rivalry, I guess, for the ages.
Yeah,
right? I mean,
Smash. I don't... no, because I'm apologetic, and I didn't mean to criticize anyone's cooking.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Palessa, you've obviously been out there. You know, I think Warda actually did something... a really interesting strategic move in the beginning by, like, appointing herself the chef because nobody's really going to want to vote her out. I mean, that happened at the Carla vote, right? Where they're like, let's get rid of Carla instead of Warda because at least Warda can cook.
So must have been good cooking. It only makes sense.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
Do people usually really value the chef out there, or do you think it depends on the situation?
I think nobody says it, but actually the chef in any season is actually quite integral to the social aspect in the game, right? And it can actually earn you quite a number of brownie points because, you know, whatever little food or whatever terrible food, I mean, if you're just eating rice, you know, can it not be burnt rice? Because that's all, I mean, everybody's just going to have literally a cupful or a handful of rice and it's not that much. So whatever little that you guys are eating there should at least not be, you know, burnt. But I mean, nobody's making like Michelin star, you know, great home cooking.
No, I think
cooking.
She was, Palessa. Don't drag me down with this. Like, I don't want to, like, I'm sure it was good. I'm sure it was great. It saved her at least that one time. I'm sure, like, as a Survivor analyst, it was probably really good.
I mean, take someone like Annalise, for example, who was, you know, who was always at the bottom of the alliances every time we had a tribe switch. But she was never taken away because I think there's something about, you know, the chef on the island that makes you warmer and that makes people warm up to you a lot more. And, you know, Annalise was like the mama because she always cooked and, you know, everybody was just eating. And sometimes it was enjoyable for what it can be. You know what I mean? Survivor food is enjoyable for what it can be. It's great sometimes because at least there's a little bit of, you know, fish or seafood with the rice, and that's what an amazing dish can be. And, you know, unlike us, I mean, I saw they had like onions and pumpkin, so maybe they were having great home cooked meals that would have been amazing for them. I don't remember ever eating like flavored food with onions on my season because, wow, so everything was just so plain with a little bit of seawater for a little added salt, and that was pretty much it. But yeah, I think being a chef on any season could actually, you know, put you in a great place of favor in a social aspect and in the island aspect in terms of when we're not doing challenges, when we're not talking about strategy, but we're just being and we're just there being on the island, talking to each other. And so it's a great way to actually, you know, be an integral part of the social aspect in any team or in any tribe to be the cook. So, yeah, I think... I don't think most of the time people that become the cooks think of it strategically, but I think in retrospect, especially thinking about Annalise, I do realize just how integral the cook is and the social aspect of Survivor.
I can't wait until next season where so many people are going to be jockeying to become the cook. They're going to have to legitimately have like an Iron Chef-esque competition at camp to figure out who is going to be the one cook on the tribe.
And I just want to say before that even happens, I'm sure it's all great. Like, it's better than what I could do now in my kitchen. I assure you of that. I can make eggs. That's basically it. So, you know, that wouldn't be my role on Survivor. But, yeah, I mean, what did you think, Mike, in terms of her, like, legitimately strategically using the Zan move, which is what we said we liked, you know, like, to take it hostage? Yeah. Like, it's a struggle for everyone around you where you want to vote someone out and they have it in their possession and they can leave with it. Like, we haven't really seen someone actively try to do this. What did you think of that move?
Right, because with Alltop, let's remember, it wasn't a defensive tactic. It was Alltop saying, I'm pissed off because you're voting me out tonight, and so therefore you don't deserve this.
It was a fait accompli. He was just basically just like throwing his toys out the cot when he left. Like, Zan was trying to use it like, change your decision based on this strategy for Buchle of her taking the flint, which we didn't get to see play out because that was only the fake plan. But here, I think it was. Like, it wasn't... There was some emotionality to it. There was the fact that, like, Alltop, she had bought it for the tribe and they don't get to keep it, literally the exact same sentiment. But it was also, like, maybe strategically, this will, in a desperate situation where we have literally no options and it's just the trio who are vulnerable, like, maybe this will do something here.
Yeah, I mean, with the Alltop thing, it was much more like, I don't like this game, so I'm taking my ball and leaving, right? So, like, nobody else can share in it. I mean, I think it's interesting in that she also feels like she has the right to take it, because once she finds out that Chappies was stealing from said rice, like, I think what Nico sort of busts them on is this sense of personal property, right? Where Nico says, I gave you this opportunity at the auction to get something for yourself or get something for the tribe, even though you feel like it's yours. It's actually for the tribe. But I think still in that moment, Warda is saying, no, this is mine. And Chappies was stealing from my supply, so I have the right to take it. You know, I think that maybe different people would be able to work with it. I don't know. I feel like this is something you would rather do maybe at an earlier point in the game. I know that they were starving, and you hilariously get this clip, right, with Chappies and Warda talking about, man, we're really running low on rice, and Chappies is the one that's really stealing from the kitchen at night. But I wonder if at this point in the game, is it too late to make decisions based on that? You know, again, going back to Zan, maybe he picked the right time to do it earlier on in the game where things like flint and rice are super important. Right now, everyone's living off of meager rations. Rewards are coming in by the plenty from an individual perspective. I don't know how many hearts and minds you're swaying at the final 7 by holding the rice hostage versus maybe like the final 14 or even 10.
Zan was such a game changer. I mean, it's just the fact that like they did know that Santini was playing the idol and there just was nothing left. But yeah, it doesn't dissuade anyone when they know that Alltop's doing that. They're just like, I guess he's leaving, you know, with the rice in the fire, and that's what the move is going to be. At that point, you can see the end, I'm sure. You're going to make the move you want to make without thinking like, wow, how am I going to survive the next like 3 weeks trying to get through without this commodity or flint or rice? Like, really, what are we going to do? So I don't think that it could really change things, but, you know, I admire the move because it's something that we liked. And Chappies switching it was hilarious. And oh, but like, it was one of so many hilarious things that Chappies was doing in this episode. He seemed like really like spurred on by Inesu's spirit from the jury, from Bonderosa, wherever she was. Yelling Operation Destiny as well was amazing.
Online. Did you see like the shot of the bird saying, you can do this, Chappies? I'm pretty sure it was Santini saying it, but people made it believe that this is Inesu's spirit animal, is that bird that was flying over the challenge and telling Chappies that he could win.
I mean, the fact that he could yell at the voting booth, Operation Destiny, and it'd be like the least crazy thing he's done in the last hour of the show speaks to what Chappies was doing in this episode. And also, speaking of Inesu, Palesa, Mike was saying to me last week, Mike, tell her about your curse theory, the Palesa curse. Yeah.
Yes. Palesa, you'd be super excited about this because you started a trend. There is an 8th place curse on Survivor South Africa. Starting with your boot in season 6, every person who has gone home in 8th place has been a woman who went home with an advantage in her pocket. It was you with your idol. It was Maba with her idol last season. And then it was Inesu here. Now, granted, this time Inesu is able to pass off the tribal council pass, but still, I mean, you kickstarted a trend here, and now we have, unfortunately, a new curse in Survivor of who's going to finish in 8th place every time.
Yeah, I mean that's not the greatest thing to pass on as a Survivor curse, but at least it makes memorable for a bit longer, you know. And yeah, it's actually crazy how it's been happening. And I think I saw that happening as well. And I think I tweeted started first, you know. So yeah, let's see if that one continues in the following seasons of Survivor SA and see if it really is a real curse or if somebody is going to break the eighth place curse.
How do we break the curse? Like, I feel like, Palesa, you'd probably need to go back and win, maybe? Like, there has to be some way that we can fix this, because we're losing people to it now, which is painful.
I think that that's definitely the only way. So everybody must know that when it's time for eighth place, you're probably going to leave with something until I get called back onto Survivor and win Survivor and break the eighth place curse.
I wonder if we could, like, manifest this, because we do know, like, some people go on and listen to this podcast. Like, maybe they'll, like, it'll become a self-fulfilling prophecy where people want to, which is, like, not, don't do that. Like, strong, cool women leaving with advantages. Like, don't make that the thing. But, like, if someone wants to really blow our minds, perpetuate something, like, they could now just do it. And we don't like that. That's bad.
So we should also mention, so obviously there was a big to-do last week, right, about the passing off after Inesu was voted out of the tribal council pass to Chappie's, what he calls a little disc, despite the fact that it is definitely not circular. I don't know if discs.
Chappie's was drunk in this episode. I'm telling you, he's also been sneaking alcohol. I don't know where it is, but it's not in his bag and it's somewhere else.
Ever since
it.
The merge, he filled up his canteen with all that delicious wine.
It makes
space.
Too much sense. Yes.
But I mean, it's interesting because I would think on the one hand, like, okay, well, I guess, you know, the tribal council pass gets used up here to really, no effect, but I guess in retrospect it does, right? Because again, if it's not played on Anella,
yeah, no, definitely.
I guess if the tribal council pass just didn't exist, then it probably would be the same effect, right? It'd be four votes on Santini, and Santini ends up going out here, unless the trio decide to split their votes on Smash.
I think they would have just voted for Smash.
Yeah, so I guess the tribal council pass does come in handy here. The look. Compared to what else we got on International Survivor this week, I am personally now, I guess, more fine in the past 7 days about the Tribal Council pass being passed off and then immediately being used here to, you know, their strategic effect. And I guess, again, good on Chappie's for getting it after the fact and using it to avenge Inesu, being so explicit about Inesu too. It was strange when Chappie starts this episode by being like, I lost my closest ally in Inesu. I'm like, Santini's right there.
Yeah, I agree.
But I guess to your point, Palesa, like, maybe Chappie's and Santini was just such a wild card at that point that Chappie's was, I mean, I guess Chappie's was working with Inesu really early on with that, like, formidable four that is now down to two, that he truly did think she was his closest ally and Santini was sort of like second string. But that was a wild thing to hear.
Yeah, I mean, Santini is so, like, you know, emotional about the way people treat her, that, like, I fear that when she heard that confessional, she, like, burned his house to the ground or something, where, like, yeah, Inesu's his closest ally. And also, I wanted to say, we didn't talk about it last week, but I will have your revenge. It's so Shakespearean in the way that it's been said. Not, like, I guess I will avenge you, also pretty dramatic. Is there a way to say you'll get revenge for someone and not sound like you're coming out of a Shakespearean play? I guess not. I guess I'll try and avenge you, friend. I don't know. No, you know what? It's a very dramatic thing to say and do, to try and avenge someone.
I don't know. If you say, like, this is for you, Inesu, feels pretty low-key.
No, but, like,
right?
To say to her, I will have your revenge. I will avenge you, father. Like, yeah, it's very true. I don't know. I mean, that just sounds like you would avenge your father. I'm trying to, like, there's no way to say I will have your revenge without sounding super dramatic, because it's a really dramatic thing to do, to get revenge. Well, I guess I'll get revenge. No, that sounds really dramatic. There's no way to say it.
Speaking of revenge, I want to ask Palesa something, again, from the juror's perspective, because Warda, the final thing she says before walking away is, don't let Chappie's win. And at Ponderosa, Rainier says, oh, that's the stupidest thing you could say, because this means that they're now going to take Chappie to the end, because now that means that he's guaranteed to not get her vote. Do you think people would consider that legitimately? Like, how much do you think that last words from Warda is going to get into people's heads about whether or not to take Chappie's to the end?
I think it's a good thing to think about, because right now in the game, it's really the time when people are starting to think about who's in the jury and what are my chances of all these people that I betrayed actually voting for me and giving me, you know, the ultimate prize. So it definitely will count. But Warda is just one person in the jury, right? And when someone thinks about or tallies their chances of actually winning, they think about all the jurors and they think about, okay, I could possibly get this person's vote. I could possibly not get this person's vote. But I think even now at Final Six, it's really still early days because so many things can happen from now until Final Two or Final Three, right? And in that time, those are the this is the time when the jury is really going to start looking closely at what are the moves that these people are now making to get to the Final Two or Final Three. And once that Final Two or Final Three comes to play, that's when you realize that, okay, what sort of moves have these people made in order to get them. So the jury isn't, I mean, even someone like Warda, you know, like myself, where nobody thought there was any chance in God's green earth that I would ever vote for Tom to win. But not all jurors are the same. And some people in the jury will think with their emotions, while others will think, you know, we'll think about Survivor, the game itself, and say, okay, sure, this person broke my heart. This person wasn't, you know, the best person to me. And it might not, I might not want them to win, but did they actually do the job of actually getting to the top? Did they outwit, outplay, outlast? Absolutely. And whoever is sitting next to them, did they actually do the same? Did they make, you know, strategic moves in order to get themselves there without just, you know, piggybacking and getting there by complete chance or luck. So yeah, there's still a lot to come out of this episode in terms of who will actually be the front runner. But it is definitely something to think about when you're still in the game about who would actually get a juror vote, you know, above you.
I mean, from a jury perspective, I want to talk about Smash and Nicole in general, because they have the luxury of all the Zumbas were taken out, like, without their consent. I mean, Sean was a sacrifice, but, you know, it was taken out by Vuna. And now Vuna, if they're sitting at the end, like, they're cannibalizing each other. So there's some anger there, whereas, like, they might have a block of friends, Zumba, who might want to vote for them. So I think it's an interesting one. I was interested in the way that it went, because last week we were like, wow, you know, Smash and Nicole, but mostly Smash's decision really rests on, is he going to flip back? Will they be a bit of a swing vote? And now it was so disparate to the point where Smash's life in the game completely rested in Chappie's hands of, like, would he send out Suntony or would he send out Smash? Which is, again, a decision that the internet is widely debating, to the point where, you know, in the what-if scenario that you're presenting, Mike, if there's no tribal council pass, I don't see him ever getting on the same page as Suntony and Chappie. Like, they're so disparate that I think he might go there in like a 3-2-1 rather than flipping to their side where they could all be immune in a rock situation. So that was so disparate to me that it really felt like this full alliance. Now, next week, we'll see if Immunity Island does force it really to become kind of pairs swinging between each other. You know, one pair will be fully immune. But were you kind of surprised in this episode that it was so much, like, we were saying you should flip back and that was just not an option?
Yeah, I mean, well, also, let's remember that something big that's going to happen in the next episode is the Fire Idol. Ugh. The Fire Idol rears its head. Nicole gets it. It all, you know, as Nico says next episode, all idols and advantages expire at the Final Six. I can guarantee you it's probably going to get played from that perspective.
No.
And so from, because let's, because I think to
no
your point,
fire.
If one pair is guaranteed, listen, you're preacher of the choir. If one pair is guaranteed safe,
choir?
Right? If,
yeah.
If one person wins immunity and sends someone to Immunity Idol, they're safe. It's going to be, you know, the other two pairs are going to vote for each other. And then she's going to play the Fire Idol. And those two people are going to compete in a fire making challenge. Right. So unless Nicole says, OK, the votes are, you know, Tyson and Kieran are safe and the votes between her and Chappie's, she's not going to play that. Because I think she'd be like, I am going to lose this hands down. I would much rather go with the majority here.
Well, yeah, so I mean, she's not going to play it if she's in the majority. Like, because again, like, there's so much of four, I think, where if Chappie's doesn't win immunity, like, the four of them will just vote out Chappie's. Or, you know, if they worry about an idol, they could split. But they're not going to play an idol and then give, like, only if she's in the minority, she's going to play the Fire Idol. So we might
exactly.
get away with an actual vote. How much do I love voting on Survivor?
Yeah, well, especially given that, again, it could easily come back onto her. And I think Nicole has definitely shown to the point in her preseason interviews how much she has been underestimated in this game. I think for playing relatively quiet so far, this was a really strong episode for her. Granted, it was just sort of like through omission, the fact that she didn't have to participate in that messy vote, in that messy discussion in tribal council, the fact that she gets this Fire Idol. I think certainly helps things. But yeah, I mean, it did seem like, as much as we talked about, okay, they're now in the power seat, and maybe this was also a bit forced by Chappie's actions, that we have a bit of an us versus them mentality. Then again, this is Survivor SA. Anything can happen. I would imagine that Smash, at least, would want to flip over to Kieran and Tyson. But Nicole might have a different way of thinking and say, you know what? Smash and I were never incredibly close, and it's clear that he's tight with Kieran and Tyson. If I go with them, I'm guaranteed to leave at 4, and I have to win out. With Chappies and Saint-Denis, you know, they just sent out Warda, who really doesn't like them at all. Maybe I have a better chance. Doesn't she says in either this episode or the last one, right, that like her ideal plan is to go to the end with Chappies and Saint-Denis. So we might possibly see a 3-3 situation next time. Perhaps one of these pairs is actually going to split up.
I mean, she did seem upset about the food stealing, but again, if it's gameplay beyond emotionality, then it's something she might do. 3-3, not the best time necessarily to flip, but like,
Tell that to Kimmy Kappenberg.
Yeah, true. Oh, saw Sierra East it, for example. I do think that it feels like the numbers are just kind of, you know, coming over the top of her, but she does have a fire idol maybe that she could use it to give Chappies and Santini a shot and then maybe work it through like that. So I guess she'd have to use probably her idol rather than just like flipping to the tie.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Or she could do both, right? Of like, just in case there's any other shenanigans going down. But yeah, just to reform what everyone was sort of alluding to in the next time on, everything expires next week.
Yes.
At the final six, LaRue said he wanted to have a relatively clean game for the last few rounds of the game. So yeah, I mean, the Tribal Council pass is gone. We're going to get the fire idol gone next round. I think there's a chance they could rehide one more idol to get played next round, but this is a chance we might actually, with Santini's play, ironically enough, she's the first person to find an idol this season and might be the last person to play one.
Yeah, I mean, I really hope that next week does come down to the fun swing vote thing. I would love if Chappies won immunity and then, you know, they have to be like the king going to him and both pairs really like, you know, flipping apart and trying to get his vote with Santini also immune. But it really might come down to the fact that then Nicole's just practicing fire because she has a fire idol. She doesn't need to appeal to Chappies. It doesn't really matter what side he goes to because we're going to fire anyway. So there's a lot at play next week. And, you know, before we kind of move on to the chili, I think we really have to talk about the auction because we very rarely get an auction. And here we are, and we had one, and that was so fun.
Plus, please give me all your thoughts on the Nikos. Should this be the official currency of Survivor South Africa?
I think the Nikos were really a great and fun addition. You know, I would like a few Nikos myself, and I think it was just something really fun and happy to include. I just hope that the winner of Survivor SA this year doesn't win a million Nikos instead of Rands, because I don't think they'd be able to use much of that. But yeah, I think it was just a great, really fun, quirky addition to the game. And yeah, it made just things, you know, lighter and more fun. And yeah, I love the Nikos.
I'd love to see that if it's like, you won Survivor and Blindside, you won a million Nikos, like as a joke, but see if someone just like, you know, destroys the set. Like, because I think, you know, as I said, like, how much is one Nico worth? Like, maybe that's a good currency. Maybe that's worth more than Rands. Maybe that's something they could buy a house with. We don't know. Could be worth a lot.
I don't know. The Nico exchange rate is pretty high, right? Because they're buying, like, letters for 50 Nikos. You know, tapas cost 200 Nikos. Like, this a lot. It's like almost like pesos. Like, a lot of Nikos can buy you very little.
There are no cents, so everything is in increments of 50. So a great currency.
Yeah, I think this is worth probably quite a lot. And look, I loved the auction. It's something that US Survivor insists is broken, which it clearly isn't. Like, we just watched it this week. Mm. It's not broken. It's still so fun. Like, I think the thing that US Survivor thinks is that they're concerned that no one will bid and they'll wait for the advantage at the end, which, even in this incredibly gamey cast, only Kieran was really focused on that. So I think that, you know, anyway, it's interesting to see if people do that. We get an insight into how they play the game. And it is never going to happen that everyone's going to do that because they're human beings, which is also interesting to see. And also so easy to fix. Like here, the hidden clue that Kieran was waiting for, it was, you know, it was a hidden clue. It wasn't just a clue. He didn't know what it was going to be and it bought him out of the auction. So make it risky. Yep. Make it a possible detriment. Surely that saves like any breaking, put it in the middle as well. And then people aren't going to necessarily wait for it because they're scared of it. And even if they do, that'll show us things about them as people, like what, you know, last week when everyone set out, we found out things about them and the dynamics. Like, It was fun and interesting and new. It's not something to be mad about. So, like, the auction is not broken. Put it back in the US Survivor.
And all you need to do is, if you are so worried about that, either get rid of advantages entirely or downscale them. Even the advantages like this, that we had in this episode, it was an advantage in the immunity challenge, which is almost as always a slam dunk, but Tyson still ends up losing it. And the, like, automatic send someone to Immunity Island thing, which, yeah, was a little unfair. Like, I do feel bad for Chappie is that he couldn't send Santini there. But at the same time, it creates this new dynamic where Nicole gets to send herself, gets to experience something that she probably wouldn't have experienced before, and now gets her hand on this idol that would ordinarily be in the hands of probably Santini, though I don't know, actually, if she's... Yeah, she would probably stay and play, right? If she's like, okay, I'm going to be safe again. Let me stay and play once more. And give up once again a chance to get this fire idol that she definitely does not want. But this was so much fun. I also like the fact that, like you said, I think it also is a strategy of how you order things. Like, I do wonder if putting the champagne in the bubble bath up front that nobody bids on and Nico being like, you idiots, why did you do that? You missed out on this. Now I'm going to get in the bath. And then immediately following it up with the beggar's plate that Nicole essentially now gets essentially all parts of all the food items is really just teaching people like, no, you better bid on this stuff. Like, you are missing out on some primo stuff. And I don't think it's a coincidence that immediately after the beggar's plate, then we get the food items that like everyone starts going in on. And so I think what you really have to do with these players is just if they are being a Kieran and they're just really being super game body and holding until they get something big, troll them with the buyout. But then also throw stuff in their face immediately to be like, ah, isn't this great? You're missing out on this. Though I think we missed out on Nico being able to get in the bath.
Totally
the
agree.
From the bath. That would have been amazing.
I mean, that feels like also a no-brainer that you should like cut to afterwards Nico just being in the bath. Like, we were really robbed of that. But it was still really fun. I mean, like, I love Kieran, but he definitely should not have got his letter. Like, where are the consequences that, like, he didn't bid on it? Because he was trying to do something. Then he bought himself out of the auction and they weren't allowed to spend money and Stillwater can do it. And I think that's a really great example of production doesn't care about explicit rules as long as it's like can make good TV. Although like really robbing Kieran of that probably would have been good TV. But like, you know, the compassion that he gets it and whatever, it's a nice moment. So that really indicated to everyone, I should have thought, that rules aren't important. And yet a day later, they're like, but what about these explicit rules? So it was fun. Beggar's Plate, very fun. Very much an Australian Survivor concept about, like, someone kind of getting everything at the beginning. Palesa, you know, you didn't get to do the auction, but what would you be doing 500 Nikos for? What's, like, your number one?
Ooh, I think, you know, I mean, Nicole, without a doubt, was the winner of the auction. I mean, she got absolutely everything. So that would have been a great one to get.
Yeah, everything. I mean, later, that's good.
I think I was lucky that I was able to win Letters from Home during my season. And it really is one of the best parts of Survivor because what people don't understand about Letters from Home, it's not just, you know, yeah, nice and emotional. It's actually one of the things that can actually keep you going because that little bit of being in touch with your home can actually give you the strength to go on a little bit longer in the game and actually go on to do great stuff. So you need that emotional revival. So had I not received a letter from home, I definitely would have bid on a letter from home because it really is one of those priceless things that you buy. Other than that, the food is great. I mean, you know, who doesn't want to pig out a little bit on Survivor and eat some good food when you've only been eating rice and pumpkin for, you know, God knows how long?
I mean, I think that's also a really good one. Like, we've talked about all the ways to fix the not broken auction, but that's another one. Like, put out emotional things from home. And then if they really are going through that, I mean, obviously that was a big part of Worlds Apart with the letters and they think that's broken, but like, yeah, do videos from home, do calls to home. You know, we're all in the doing it locally at the moment. Like, let's see if people will pass up on that for an advantage. And if they do, what an interesting thing we've learned about them as a player. Like, I really feel like that, surely that means the auction's not broken. Like, that's such good drama for TV.
I do find it interesting that Santini says out loud, you know, before this season, I told my family that I never bid on a letter.
That I hate them
all. Well, to your point, Paulus, is it just like you don't realize how much you miss the people in your life until you're actually out there playing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you think about them a lot when you're on the island, you know, and you can't stop thinking about it. And Survivor is more than just a game. You know, it really teaches you a lot about a lot about yourself and the things that you miss in your real life. You know, it helps you not to take for granted the little things that you see around you every day, just like your family and your friends, or even some of your, you know, your little favorite foods that you never really think is that important because, you know, you have access to it. But wait until you don't have access to it. And then you realize just how much you love this particular thing and just how much you miss, you know, your family and being around them. And what a great source of strength they are to you. So, I mean, Survivor makes you realize so much about yourself. And I think any castaway can tell you that they got back appreciative of the people in their lives. And for the first few months after coming back home, they didn't want to be anywhere away from their friends or family, because that's when it's the game that makes you realize just how much you'd like to be around these people and just how much they mean to you.
I mean, I definitely, I don't know, for me, I would always take the letter. I'd take it right now. I miss my family at this very moment. But like for other people, they seem to be stronger than I am. And it takes maybe 30 days in the game to pay 50 nikos for a letter, which is like $500. So, you know, people's loved one ends up being important. Or it's not. Or it's like 50 cents for a letter. Oh. We don't know because of the currency.
And they print and they put a picture of Nico on it.
Amazing.
Oh, I love this. This was asked for us. This was not either one of our ideas. I wish we could take credit for it, but this is all LaRue, baby. So thank you, LaRue, for bringing up this idea of Nico. Something that I think when the idea of fire tokens came out, people thought it'd be called like Probes Bucks, but SA did what US couldn't. And not only with the podium idol, but also putting the host on the currency. And again, Nico in such rare form. I think he also made a lot of ad hoc decisions. Like, I think when the contestants are saying like, oh, does that mean I can take the bath now? He's like, oh, yeah, sure. Like, he did not request that of the contestants. So good on Nicole for
essentially. No, it was the biggest play. He couldn't offer it to her. She had to beg. So then she said,
her being able to retroactively get items that she passed up. But also, you know, him being able to give stuff to her, you know, him being able to swerve with Kieran. I know you said, Shannon, that he shouldn't have done that, but like, this is just such a great episode for Nico. You know, when you think that you'd think that on paper, literally him getting printed on his own currency would be the highlight. But no, the fact that he was able to just lay such a smackdown at Tribal Council was just like the cherry on top of this plate of sweets that was Nico Panaggio this episode.
Yeah, he was the ultimate slashy in this episode. He was a host of Survivor. He was a judge, possibly a school teacher or principal. He was on currency. He was an auctioneer. Like, he was doing a lot. They should have paid him extra this week, I think.
I would love to give him chizzy points if I could, but I know, Shannon, you'd be more furious at me than Warda at Chappie's.
I won't fly. That's not, no, you can't. He was great, but absolutely not in 100 years. And with that, in that very menacing tone, let's get to the chizzy. Take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
One, two, three. One, two, three.
All right, I will go first again because it helps me with the math, and that is basically where I'm at with it now. But yeah, so no one I thought was perfect this week. I thought a lot was getting done, none of it flawlessly. So difficult situation all around, but I'm going to give points within that with the fact that only three people were vulnerable. Like, it was a difficult strategic week, but here are my points. 3 points I'm giving to Suntony. I thought, you know, as I've said, back on form, using being underestimated to her advantage, being self-aware of her own emotionality, for her own gain. And she got her way. She used the idol correctly, finally, which is great. Like, she was on top of it. There was no way they were getting one over on her. So I'm giving her 3 points in that. Even though I don't agree with, you know, the move for Wider, and that really did seem like her move. But again, no one was perfect. She got it done. 2 points I'm giving to Chappies. Which is crazy. Like, it's an insane thing that this man could come in and do everything he did in this episode. And I'm still giving him 2 chizzy points. He won immunity, which he needed to do, that he could get exactly his way. He and Suntony both argued really well and won the argument, which was like the focal point of the episode. I think it's okay from a jury perspective based on what they're saying, only because it's Chappies and he can get away with things because he's just such an extreme person. Points are lost for careless stealing, I have to say, leaving the pot out. I don't have a justification for that, but I do think, like, he and Suntony get their way in this episode, so I have to give them most of the points because, you know, whether it was through an idol, you know, the physical challenge, whatever way they were doing it, like, they come out winners, so I'm giving them the points. And then I would give a point to Kieran being onto Santini early was a good start. And then, you know, to actively earn his name being off the block, as we've discussed, as a double agent, and saying nothing at Tribal, him and Smash, both of them get, you know, all the honorable mentions for that in terms of just like, yeah, Homer Simpson just going back into the bush while everyone fights to the point where they don't say anything until Nico is literally like, and did you steal? And they're like, yeah, yeah, we're also thieves. But but like only when they're specifically spoken to do they speak. And I think that was a really good move. So Mike, who are you giving your points to?
Okay. I'm going to give, let's see. All right.
Not Nicole.
Okay. Not Nico, but
that's
Nicole.
Good. That's close.
Welcome to the clubhouse. Yes. I'm going to give you one here. I would give you more, but I feel like we're not exactly going to see how the Fire Idol comes into play, if at all, until next episode. But I think, you know, super smart choice to send herself to stay in play, even if she feels like she's in a comfortable position. She gets the Fire Idol. You know, she's guaranteed to escape unscathed from this vote, even if the Vunas are turning on each other. And she does have an ace up her sleeve. You know, she could tell everyone about the Fire Idol to really just like, this could be an easy way to get Santini out of the game, right? Because I don't think anyone's going to purposely, if they know about the Fire Idol, I don't think they're voting for Chappies.
It's true. Take the Nicole's shield away. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that that could be a way to really get to Santini if she wants to do that. And so I think, you know, Nicole is someone who I would honestly say pencil her in for like the final four, maybe even final three at this point, because I don't think anyone's getting rid of her anytime soon. I think you get rid of Smash before you get rid of Nicole. Maybe she's a bit of an individual immunity threat, but even then, Kieran and Chappies are so much bigger in the eyes of everyone else than her. So I think she's actually in it for the long haul. And I think this episode showed that. So I'm going to give 1 point to her. And I'm gonna, you know, mimic what you did, Shannon. 2 points to Chappies.
Ridiculous.
I think I'm gonna remove points for that sloppiness, but he ends up winning this episode. Also, I gotta give like extra credit because he was just so hella entertaining in this episode. Truly just an incredible survivor.
Absolutely
character.
Not what the Jizzy's for, but okay.
But listen, my criteria, Shannon. Yeah, I think he was so good in so many ways. I think the fact that he did what he did, got called out for stealing, and then had the jury coming back and being like, well, it's not that bad, I think just really shows, you know, how perception can go a long way. And honestly, good on him for what he did. Him for having the foresight to like steal these sweets, to cook this extra meal for himself, to give him more energy in the game since he knows his back is against the wall. He should have cleaned up after himself, granted, and it would have been a much better maneuver. But the fact that he had the foresight to do that, and honestly, just the image of him eating spoonfuls of rice out of his backpack is something that still tickles me to this day. But I got to give 3 points to Santini. Mm-hmm. Like you said, questionable choice of target. But I think she had her own personal rationale to do so. She and Chappies end up winning this vote. She uses an idol correctly, which I think is a nice point for her in the eyes of the jury. And I do think the way she was coming across to people like Nicole, to people like Tyson, like, I think she is endearing herself to people. And granted, maybe the fallout from this tribal council means she's not going to work with Kieran or Tyson necessarily. But the way she's coming across, at least, I know that some of the Zombas have been angry with her. But even someone like Warda is much more anti-Chappies than anti-Santini. In her final word, she's like, you know, I think I don't know if Chappies is playing an ethical game. I think everyone else is, even Santini. So I think Santini has now created not only a shield for herself, but also possibly a bit more of a jury go for herself in Chappies. And I think that's really great for her game. So despite everything that happened, it was a really imperfect week, to your point, Shannon. I think I had to count out the trio just because of how they lost out and the way that most of them came across. And this was not really an episode where Anella did anything. He was invisible, much like his position at Tribal Council proper. So it kind of was, it did have to be these three by default.
I mean, there's a world in which Santini wins. Like, it's a legitimate world. That's a, you know, Survivor South Africa is truly, you know, a gift that keeps on giving. But Palesa, who were you giving your points to?
I think, you know, for the most part, I agree with both of you. Santini was really the winner of this episode. So she does really deserve 3 points for making sure, and whether she played the move right by getting rid of Warda instead of Tyson or Kieran. She still got rid of who she wanted to get rid of. Mm. She played her idol correctly, and she for the first time this season, she was on the right side of the cards. And in terms of her being the lead in the entire thing. And even though she was working with Chappies, she's actually the person who literally got things running the way that they were supposed to. So she deserves most of the points. I think I'll give Brownie points, so maybe two to Nicole.
Okay, Nicole did so well today.
I call them Brownie points because I think luck was on her side this episode. Luck was on her bigger side. From the time of the auction, everything that was positive for her happened from the auction. And it was just came from that those two bids that she made being the biggest plate and then being able to send herself to Immunity Island, you know, therefore being immune for this vote, which she could potentially have been in danger for if she didn't, if she wasn't immune because Chappies and Santini were not going to participate, you know, were immune, knew they were going to be immune for this particular one. And they could only have chosen between Nicole and Anela to send home. So she could have been in danger had she had luck not been on her side and also getting an added advantage. So she definitely gets the brownie points for being on the side of luck. And then I think I'll also give some points to Kieran for, I think, being the kind of person that he is, being able to make decisions and moves without being, you know, in people's faces, will actually have a great part for him for both the game right now going forward and maybe having some possible alliances going forward, even though, you know, they're in a difficult position in terms of, you know, having three pairs. He can still be able to communicate with other people, which is, you know, a really big advantage in the game. Still having, you know, the leeway to even, you know, be able to talk or take a walk with someone is a big, big point for you, because all you need sometimes is one conversation with the right person to change the game or to get yourself ahead for one extra vote. So as well as with the jury, because they will, I think the jury will have the perception that they won't feel as betrayed by him just because they didn't see him sort of stand up front and say, I am the one that's making all these moves. I am the big guy. I am the hero. I am the one who is taking control of the game. And so they're not going to feel, you know, like maybe they would feel with a Tyson, for example, and say, you took me out. I feel, you know, I don't have a great connection with you. They might actually, you know, be a little more subtle with him because he was subtle in terms of his position in the moves that he played. So the jury might not feel, you know, might not have as big of a grudge with him as well. So I'll say three for Santini, definitely. I'll give two to Nicole and I'll give one to Kieran.
Okay, so that means that the chat and now Kieran is still in the lead. He's now on 43 points. Santini jumps up to 39. So it's really heating up. Tyson is then on 29. Anesu was left on 26. Chappies is on 23 now. Rania was left on 15. Carla was left on 14. Amy on 12. Smash is on 6. Nicole jumps up to 3. Wyda is left on 2. Dino 2. Sean 1. And Marisha 1. And those are currently the charts. And now I want to talk about, you know, a smaller week for the sponsors, which makes sense because it's really all about Nico's, you know, at the moment. But take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and the U.S. Army Blues for the Biostress Variety Hour.
And now it's the Biostress Variety Hour with your hosts, Shannon Goss.
Everyone was expecting.
And Mike Blue. Biostress, it's delicious.
Oh, my God. Why was it so thick?
One. Wait, so it's an episode focused around food, and we did not see that much from our food sponsors? That's like primo content right there. That's a layup.
Yeah, they should have definitely had to bid on, like, Future Life, right?
Yeah, or at least say, like, hey, you know, if you're down and out and you feel like Chappie stole your food, Future Life gives you the energy that a whole bag of stolen sweets would. Like, I feel like there's so much food content there, you gotta just use it to your advantage.
Yeah, like, our product is worth stealing. Don't steal it though, because
that is true.
We're trying to make money.
Now listen, the rules are murky in Survivor. They are not in the real world. If you steal Future Life, you will get caught and you will get punished for
it. All right, so that's the tweet. That just should have been what it is. Future Life, good enough to steal, but don't actually steal it. We're not like Survivor, where if someone else stole, it's okay that you stole. Actually, you'll both be in trouble, because that's illegal. So that's the tweet. If they could fit that into 280 characters, I don't know why you're not tweeting for Future Life. But Palesa, It's a very different sponsor landscape than when you played. Steers is gone, Biostrath is gone. Which of the current sponsors are you really drawn to?
I think I really like that Mahindra is still in there. And, I mean, they did it really great this episode because, you know, they got their car to come on. They were part of the reward. And, yeah, they really sort of, you know, showed up for this particular one. And they're one of the sponsors who've been there since my season.
That's
so
true.
They've been for 3 seasons now. And, yeah, so I think I'm all about Mahindra.
That's true. They really are the mainstays. You know, they've been there. Outsurance was there and then came back. So they as well, like, they've been there for a long time. But Mahindra's really, you know, never wavered. And I really have to take that into account. But so this week, the best tweet of the entire week was from someone that I've already eliminated from the branch. Like, I kind of want to bring them back just for this. It was Cape Union Mart, and they said, "Congratulations, Chappies. Those muscles were put to use. Muscles as in..."
Oh,
yeah. And in quotation marks, it was a brilliant pun from Cape Union Mart. That's just good stuff.
That's, oh, my heart. Oh, man. Oh, I have so much love for Cape Union Mart now. Damn, that's a good one.
Why
that's
did
a
I real good one, especially them? With I literally can't
especially
remember.
With mention of the muscle machine. I think it was because they just weren't saying anything about the season. Like, I think right. You said they were a little bit basic, and so you're like, that people are doing much more flashy things.
Oh, let's no, it was because they used that gif of Vladimir Putin, and I was like, this is the best you can do. But now they have this muscle pun. I can't keep bringing people back, but like, I kind of want to. I thought that was great. That was one of the best tweets of the episode. Future Life in the lower third. I thought this was pretty good. They said the ultimate advantage. Support for your immunity when Nicole is reading the description for the Fire Idol. And I was like, hey, it's kind of shady at me who has said I don't like the Fire Idol, but it's nice that they're supporting Nick in his endeavors, right? Saying it's the ultimate advantage. Like, maybe he should stand Future Life because there's clearly something happening over there.
Well, maybe they mean ultimate in that it is literally the final one, right? Like, there are no more advantages after this. It's gone next round. This is quite literally the ultimate advantage.
Quite possibly. Cape Union Mart had the lower third where they said prepare for survival when Warren is talking about taking the rice. that's funny because it's like a warning. Like, prepare yourself, this is getting dark.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, you don't want to know what happens in Tribal Council. We have the screeners. We know what's happening. Be warned, fans.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it's a warning for the contestants that they're not going to have any rice. Like, they literally need to prepare for survival. Like, it's getting dire. They'll have no food. So I kind of like that. But in the tweets, not a lot. Future Life tweeted, episode 12 incoming, and we are anticipating a belter. Who's watching with us and who's on your hit list for tonight's episode of Survivor SA? Fresh Drop replied, saying, we're watching and we got snacks, with a graphic of Future Life bars that they sell at Fresh Drop. And then I responded saying, I love this alliance. So some weird crossover going here because Fresh Drop sells Future Life. So that's like two sponsors in one.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever had that before, right? It's not like the Mahindra car is like powered by Future Life or anything, or you can't buy outsurance for your Mahindra car. So we might see a partnership forming.
Yeah, I mean, Fresh Drop is definitely talking the most to the other brand. So I like that. I mean, the guests usually come on Palestine and are very high on Fresh Drop as like the garage that you go eat at when you're drunk at 2 a.m. on a Saturday night. Like, can you endorse that Fresh Drop is that good?
Absolutely. If after a night of partying and you don't go past one, you know, grab. I mean, one thing that's really, really famous in South Africa is savory pies after a night out. So if you, you know, go to Fresh Drop and grab a savory pie and, you know, chow it in the car quickly on your way home, because, I mean, you need something to snack on just after a night out. It would definitely be the place to do that.
I mean, people love Fresh Drop. I'm so, like, they were my front runner from the beginning. Future Life continues to be hilariously vague. They tweeted, don't be blindsided. An alliance with Future Life means smart nutrition for life. It's like nothing out of that. Hungry to win, an alliance with Future Life ensures your game is always strong. Again, like no one really was talking about their brand in C-League, Mike. I don't know why they didn't get that memo that would have been good marketing.
Yeah, or maybe like, you know, take a picture of Tribal Council and insert, you know, speech bubbles when Warda and Tyson are yelling at Chappies of being like, you took my Fresh Stop. How dare you? It's so delicious.
But someone
you
literally know, saw like, Future Life earlier in the season. Like that actually was something that happened on the season.
Yeah, though it's been a long season, Shannon. You know, we don't know. They might not have that term of a long-term memory. I mean, speaking of how long the season is, we're, you know, basically a month away right now from the finale and you ultimately making your decision. So we're in the end game now, Shannon Gus.
Yeah, you know, not the finale of Survivor South Africa, the finale of The Branchula. And with that, I am going to eliminate a brand because I have to bring back Cape Union. No, I'm joking. That's going to be the worst competition ever if I just kept bringing back brands.
Yeah, everyone in social media is going to be like, this is the worst season ever. Shannon can't make up her mind as a lead. I don't know what she's doing.
I actually literally can't make up my mind, but I'm okay. So we have Mahindra, Wild Coast Sun, Future Life, Fresh Shop, and OutSurance. I'm going to get rid of OutSurance. Like, I know it was Jason's pick for me, but they're really giving me not a lot. They don't do a lot on Twitter. It really is that same joke over and over again. Who knows? I mean, with me, I'll probably bring them back next week, but at this point, they are OutSurance of the Branchula, so...
Don't worry, OutSurance, as your consolation prize, here's 500 Nikos. Don't spend them all in one place.
It's funny because at the auction, like, people often, like, in the past have tried to, like, save money to buy stuff at the airport. Imagine going, like, I mean, I guess they probably a lot of them are flying home, even though it's in South Africa, like, going to the airport being like, what will 10 Nikos get me?
Yeah, I can imagine just trying to pass something off, or, like, there's a busker, like, a street musician on the street, and it's like, you put some Nikos in their hat. What are they going to do in response to that?
Probably just, like, throw something at you, throw it back at you. Like, that's not... Yeah, no. And, you know, I want to live in a world where Nikos are the universal currency for every country, but we have a way to go before we get there. So, in the meantime, I do have some questions from the listeners. Tommy Guam asks, should Santini have used the idol as soon as Tribal started? They could have watched the trio eat each other right in front of them and perhaps get Tyson or Kieran voted out instead. Now, they did know about the idol, so it basically was a public idol. It was kind of like she was wearing it. But what they could have done as a strategy is been like, we won't tell you who we're voting for. You know, we're not going to tell you it's Warida. Basically, like, we'll put one vote on two of you, you know, one vote each. And we're not going to tell you who, and, like, you really have to make the decision as the three go. Now, again, it's not as binary as we're seeing it. Like, they think they're working with Kieran. They don't want to, like, probably put him in that position. But would you like this plan if they kind of really put it that way and said to the three, like, you decide between yourselves and then just, like, watch it go up in flames?
Yeah, so people have been suggesting this. This is what Ben did in Survivor 35. This is actually, I think, what Jacques did last season, right, where he's like, I'm going to play the idol right now before the vote, so there is absolutely no, you know, speculation. I'm playing the idol. Now you have to vote someone out. I think the issue is I have yet to see a time where that has worked. And remember, when we saw Jacques do that, remember, Mabba and Mike still vote for Jacques, right? Like, I wonder if there's something where this trio is just, like, so ironclad that they still vote out Santini. And they're just like, no, we're not going to turn on each other. We're not going to play your game, especially what, you know, Chappie's pulls. I think there's a non-zero chance it happens, as weird as that may be. I don't know. Palesa, what would you think if Santini stood up and said, I'm playing this idol right now? Do you think the trio would scramble?
Honestly, I think I don't think they would. I think they would think about, you know, what to do in terms of Anela and, you know, how to to make sure that they might get rid of him. But I really do doubt that they would have turned on each other unless they were being truthful to Anela when they were trying to rope him and said they would anytime put him as final three over Warda. And if that was real, then, I mean, possibly they were just going to vote out Warda then. But I really doubt that move would have worked. So in the way that it played out, I think it would still play out the same way.
For me, like, you know, if she's just playing it early, like, I do believe that it's like they all knew she was playing it. So it is like a similar thing happening. For me, it's more like, do Kieran and Tyson, if they don't know that those two votes are on Warda and that they could be vulnerable, like, there probably is a world in which Kieran and Tyson then pile their votes on Warda just in case. Like, that, Kieran definitely wants Warda out the most. Warda's probably voting for Kieran in that way because Tyson's, like, in the middle of that, and Tyson's probably making his decision. I think he's probably going with, you know, with Kieran and voting for Warda, but he'd really have to make a decision in that. I just don't know that... The only reason that they went with this is, like, you know, Kieran knows he's taken his name off the block. Tyson, in ways, like, his name's off the block. They know exactly what's happening, and they basically accepted that Warda was going to go, and they both were okay with that. But in a world where they don't know who it is and it could be them and they haven't earned their name getting off the block, like, I could see them piling votes on Warda themselves. And then, yeah, they would have done it themselves rather than leaving the dirty work to the people on the other side.
that's a good point. That let's remember that Warda, it wasn't that she was necessarily happy to go, but she talked about this a lot in her exit interview. She talked about it with me in the interview that, like, she was totally fine going here. She felt that the energy of this season had kind of been redirected in a way where things had gotten more cutthroat, and she didn't necessarily feel like she wanted to go along with that. Everyone had the end in sight, and so everyone was, you know, maybe a little bit more competitive in that regard. So I still can imagine a world where Warda, like, votes for Santini, just being like, screw it, if I go, I go here, but, like, I'm not going to play your game right now.
Yeah, I think the three of them basically accepted that, like, barring a miracle and, like, a ruling from Nico, like, Warda was going home here. And I don't know if the name had been someone else, like a Tyson, if Kieran or Tyson would have allowed that, or if it had been up in the air. So I do think there's a way that this could change. I mean, there's not much they can do with just, you know, the three votes that they have and the fact that, you know, Chappies and Santini are also still voting and putting at least one vote on one of them. So it would have been really dicey, but I think they might have tried to power vote somewhere or changed it up rather than just, you know, voting for Santini. And basically what they did, I mean, it's what everyone laughed at, you know, Mike for doing last season, but they did vote for someone that they knew would be immune, and they just, you know, hoped for the best, but they knew in her their confessional that it wasn't going to work, and they just allowed that to happen. They all allowed Warda to go home, including Warda. So that's something that might not have happened had it not definitively been her name.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, those are all the questions that I had. We had a lot of questions about, like, you stealing food, Palesa, what was allowed in your season, but I think we've spoken through a lot of that. So with that, you know, where can people find you on social media to hear any of your thoughts or what's going on in your life or anything about Survivor South Africa?
All right, well, both my Twitter and my Instagram handle are at Tau Palesa Voice, so that's TauPalesaVoice. And so you'll get to know, you know, especially on Twitter, usually during the episode or after the episode, I say a bit of my thoughts on, you know, that particular episode. And so if you really want to know how I feel about each episode, you should definitely follow me on there. And, you know, on Instagram, I speak, you know, every now and then I post throwbacks of my days on the Survivor Island and just know a lot about, you know, my current life and the things that I get up to now, my, you know, my career, my personal life and so on.
Great. Well, Mike, what do you have going on in the podcast world?
Usual stuff. Got some Loss going on. Got some X-Files going on. I continue to sub in on What If coverage this past week on Everything is Super, which had really, really brilliant and really sad episode that served as Chadwick Boseman's, I think, one of his final performances in general, but one of his final performances as T'Challa, as he personified T'Challa taking to the stars as part of the Guardians of the Galaxy. Really great episode, really great chat, and in my opinion, I think the ultimate, like, personification of T'Challa, Black Panther, as well as Chadwick Boseman. So if you're a fan of him, I very much encourage people to check out that episode and the podcast as well. And then, of course, covering Big Brother 2 over on the BNB, as well as talking about it on the Exit Press. And Shannon, you and I got on the line for almost 3 hours last week to talk through the previous week of Australian Survivor. I know it's a little out of fashion at the moment because we just started a new week, but suffice it to say, it lit up the internet more than this episode of Survivor SA, even with mostly negativity. So I think we were able to vent our thoughts, I think be a bit cathartic as well as a bit hopeful about just that absolutely wackadoo season so far. And so if people are looking for some venting, in the style of the way this tribal council was, then I encourage people to check that out. That was a really fun time.
Yeah, well, you know, I was going to plug that, but you did. This week I'll have Tess O'Halloran on the week 6 Australian Survivor podcast. We've got exits happening every week as well. So that's been really fun. And then next week for Survivor South Africa, we're still working out the schedule, but I'm pretty sure it will be Jean-Michel from your season, Palesa. And that might be a little bit later in the week than usual because we'll probably have to record the next day. So look out for it like Monday South African time / US time, maybe Tuesday in Australia. Hopefully that still gives people a few days to listen. But Palesa, thank you so much for coming on to this, you know, very dramatic episode of, I guess, the podcast and also Survivor South Africa recapping. It's been great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much, guys. I really enjoyed it.
It was the perfect recap for the perfect episode. I just cannot speak highly enough about how much I enjoyed this particular episode of Survivor. It was funny. It was dramatic. You know, there was not a lot of complicated strategy going on. But after everything that happened in this merge so far, I was happy to take like a brief break and focus on the human drama of everything going on. It was, in my opinion, Survivor entertainment at its finest, a clear reminder about how there are people playing out there. And it makes me really excited for what's to come. I've really appreciated what Warda has brought to the season so far. She was unapologetically herself the entire time and brought on fantastic TV moments like we saw at Tribal Council. And so hopefully this is the beginning of what is going to be a very zany ride to the end.
I mean, I think what it is that sometimes when the world is burning, you just need to spend 15 minutes watching people yell at each other about sweets and rice. And that's what we got. It was so dramatic. It was, you know, mostly in extremely good fun. Yelling Operation Destiny, switching rice and sand. This cast continues to be ridiculous, but we are enjoying every second of it. So with that, I will throw it to the exit interview with Warda and hope you guys enjoy.
All right, everybody. I could not think of a better person to talk to today about everything that just went down in this past episode. Hide your rice. Hide your sweets. We're talking to Warda today. Warda, how's it going?
I'm good, and you? I don't know why you'd hide the sweets, because I didn't steal that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. If anything, we should be trading out the bag of sweets for a bag of sand, maybe. So happy to talk with you after what was a really tense night in Tribal Council. What was it like watching it all back yesterday?
It was hectic and kind of now looking at it a little comical, like it was funny.
That's good. I'm glad that we were able to, you know, see the lightness of the situation, because I mean, understandably, a very emotionally charged night. I know you said at the end, you said this a lot in your videos at the Ponderosa, that, you know, you were sort of relieved to be going in that moment, that you felt like your energy had been redirected. You felt like the game was going in a direction that you didn't necessarily vibe with. Can you talk to me a little bit more about that? What were your feelings upon leaving the game? And was that based in just what had recently happened, or was that more of a long time thing?
I think up until this point, up until the Anesu vote, I played a pretty straight game. Like, it was quite clear where my alliances were. I was targeting people that were in the opposition. So it was very much straight gameplay, you know, like it was opposite team. I'm on the one team. We score a goal. They lose. We win. The end. You know, it's the rules of the game. Whereas now, the minute we started turning on each other, and the first time we did that was with the Anesu vote, it dawned on me that we had reached that point in the game that I was now getting into the business end of things. And I would now have to start either playing a selfish game, which I knew on some level was too much in conflict with who I am at my core, because I was playing as the person that I really am. Like, I am an opinionated person. I do stand up for things that I believe in, even if I do stand alone. I don't tolerate shit, and I definitely don't tolerate misogyny and people just being inconsiderate. Those are triggers for me. And I knew that going forward, I was going to have to set aside certain things about my core values that I wasn't comfortable necessarily to do. So I think on a deeper level, that wasn't even planned. Like, I literally instinctively, that just came out of my mouth. I'm so relieved, because I think on some level, I must have felt that way. Like, okay, I'm relieved. I haven't had to turn on Tyson or Kieran. Thank goodness, you know, like, at least I didn't have to do it. You know, I can leave here with a clear conscience kind of thing. Where there's a lot of people that even at that point in the game was living with a lot of guilt, were living with a lot of, already with a lot of skeletons in their closet and feeling bad about a lot of things. Whereas I didn't necessarily have that.
So let's talk about that Tribal Council that ends up having you get your torch snuffed, much to your relief, as you said. So I want some clarification on the rice situation, right? Because you talked before Tribal Council about your plan to take the rice with you just in case you're voted out. But at Tribal Council, we hear, oh, no, I actually only took some of the rice and Tyson had most of the rice. So what was the true plan there? Did the plan change at all between, you know, when you were talking before Tribal Council and what actually happened at Tribal Council?
No, I mean, if you know, the three of us, we don't, me, Kieran and Tyson, we don't make mistakes with our game. We know exactly what we're doing when we do it. And we say what we need to say because it's for a specific reason. So me saying in camp, I'm taking the rise to protect myself, blah, 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 was all calculated. It was a reason that we were trying, as Kieran, as Tyson said at the tribal council, we were trying to smoke out the person who, and bait the person, which we knew was Chappies, to come and steal the rice. Because, and that's why I obviously was not going to keep the bulk of the rice with me. I was going to keep it with Tyson. Tyson had like 90% of the rice in his bag, and no one else knew that because we made sure no one else knew that. And I was never going to leave with the rice. It was really just an eye blind. It was misdirection, which is classic survivor. Like, it was a way for me to kind of protect myself in a smart way, in that I thought, okay, worst case scenario, they think they don't get to the, we don't catch the person who's stealing the rice is still in my bag. We get to tribal council. And I mean, he was so dumb. He didn't even realize that there's no way that could have been all the rice. Like, the bag he took out when he eventually gave it back to me had like maybe a cup of rice in it or two, whereas I got a whole big thing of rice at that auction. Mm-hmm. They actually had enough rice to take them all the way for the 9 days. Like, that rice was enough to take it to 9 days. So we were set for the next. And that's what angered me also. I was like, we finally had so many issues with food shortages. I disadvantage myself by not being selfish and eating myself, and I choose rice for everyone because I'm thinking about everyone being comfortable for the next 9 days, that the remaining days, and this asshole goes and steals the rice, you know. So my last resort was kind of like, okay, if they think I have all the rice and they really think I'm going to leave with it, which is clearly what they thought, they were going to go, well, as much as we would like to vote for her, damn it, we'll have to keep her around, because if she leaves with her eyes, that's it, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was all just misdirection and gameplay. It was never a selfish, you know, play on my part to like, oh, I'm going to show all of them and leave with the eyes. I would never do that.
So talk to me about, you know, your intentions at Tribal Council with really bringing up to Nico, you know, look at what Chappies did from the auction, because it's safe to say that the three of you knew that, assumingly, one of the three of you would be going, right? The, like, Santini would use her idol. You knew, like you said, you were possibly in danger, hence that sort of rice maneuver. When at Tribal Council, you call out Chappies for what he did. What was your intention behind that? Were you trying to get him kicked off the show? Was it just more so like, hey, jury, this is what he's doing?
Well, it was a two-part thing. We were like, we obviously didn't think it would have potentially worked had we not all been complicit with the bribery stealing thing. But had we had our hands completely clean there, what our intention was to have him stripped of his immunity necklace. Because it's like going to the Olympics and taking drugs. You get stripped of your title, like a Lance Armstrong getting stripped of his Tour de France titles because they found him doping. So that's what our narrative was all about. It gave him an edge in the competition. He came into that immunity challenge more juiced up than everyone else because he had sweets, he had protein, he had carbs. He literally had a full healthy meal. So we weren't competing against someone that was as depleted as we were. So that was our intention in bringing it up. And then also, if he does, say he gets stripped of his title, or even if he doesn't, we were just like, it's going to be a black mark against his name. If he sits at the end, the jury must know everything. Because, I mean, that's the point of the jury, to know everything that happens at camp and have as much information at their disposal when they make a decision for who wins. And for us, it was, well, if somebody got to the end by cheating, then do they really deserve to win? You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk about some of the relationships that you had. And let's actually start with Tyson, because it's really interesting, right? You said that you, Kieran, and Tyson were a trio, but there was so much talk about you and Tyson as a pair, not just from the Tied Destinies twist. I know that you and Tyson were close from the beginning alongside Anesu. Was he your closest ally out there?
Yes, he was. And then Kieran. And I think Tyson was kind of the person that brought, was the glue between myself and Kieran. And I think we were equally closer to him as opposed to Warda and Kieran. But we did have a loyalty to one another, and the plan was always to take each other to the final three. There were three people, whatever. It was meant to be, it was always going to be the three of us. And yes, Kieran dangled me in front of Anela, but it was just also, it was all a play. Like, we knew that I was his Achilles and I was the person that would, you know, get him to do what we wanted him to do. So I was dangled in front of him, but it was never real.
Speaking of Anela, safe to say, you two had some words in those pre-merge tribal councils right before the merge hit in Zamba 3.0. Eventually we see by the end though, I mean, you're working together on that Anesu vote. When did that happen, being able to sort of mend those bridges, considering how you didn't see eye to eye beforehand?
You know what? I think it was just us being professional. We were trying to work together. We were trying to get something over the line, and that's what we needed to do. But we were all very aware, as in me, Tyson, and Kieran, that Anela plays a game of, you know, he goes wherever he feels safest, you know, whoever's willing to be his knight in shining armor. Because, I mean, up until this point, there's always been a knight in shining armor. It was first Rainier, and then I think it might have been, then it was Sean, and then it was Nicole. So there's always been this knight in shining armor willing to swoop him up and save him. So we knew he plays from a place of fear, and the way to have him on side is to make him feel safe and to make him feel included. And that's what we tried to do.
Also on that swap tribe was, of course, Santini. It's safe to say you end up sticking Vuna strong there, even though you have, you know, some nervousness because of what happened on Zamba 2.0. You end up working together until these last couple of votes. Talk to me about your relationship, especially, you know, how things end when you try to convince her, which ends up not exactly working, for her to not play her idol in that vote that sends you home.
Our relationship was always like difficult. It was always going to be strained because I'm now looking back on it, like watching the season. I mean, I said in the beginning, in one of my first confessionals, I said, you know, Santini's a very volatile person and very emotional, and she plays with a lot of emotion. But I thought I'd gotten the hang of it. But also, I realized the fluidity of her game. Also, as time goes on, it inevitably makes you at some point have to turn or lie to someone else. So she was, it ended up making her paranoia really bad. Like, she was paranoid about everyone and everything. Like, she could be your friend one day and you could give her a slightly wrong look, a comment that in a tone that she didn't like, and that was it. That's your number up, gone. And then she flips again to the other side. And that was extremely hard to manage because I was going through my own internal process, which had nothing to do with Tyson or Kieran or anyone else on the island, with voting Anesu out, because that was the first vote where I had to turn on somebody that I was supposed to be loyal to. So I was dealing with that with myself, but somehow at that, you see at the beginning of the episode, she somehow finds that, like, oh, you guys are being fake, and she now kind of like makes it about her. And I just, at that point, after 30 days of having to manage her emotions, I'm going through an emotional situation and I'm not even allowed to do that because, I have to go and look after and make sure that Santini feels okay again.
So I think for me, that was also like kind of a breaking point where after, and like you say, I was with her the longest. We never parted. So I was literally with her for 30 days straight, having to work with this person who was so emotional and could hate you in a drop of a hat, which is what happened. I mean, we were fine up until that moment. I gave her a demeanor that didn't agree with her, and she internalized it and she made it about her. And all of a sudden I was a bitch and I needed to go. So, yeah.
And obviously that's going to segue into Chappie's huge up and down dynamic, right? Between everything with the poll vote to then the reset button to obviously how things end between the two of you in the last episode. I mean, even after the reset button, did you ever feel like you were on the same page? I know you kept saying, like, in our alliance, everyone is welcome. Did you ever feel that you had that relationship with him up until everything that happened this past episode?
I do think our relationship was mended to a point. And I was genuinely, like I said, I don't discount anyone. And I mean, I was willing to work with him because I realized the strength in working with somebody like that. He is the perfect meat shield. Like, everybody's so focused on him. If you stayed with him, you are literally that little fish under the great white shark, swimming with the shark and no one noticing. And that was Santini. And that's why she kept so close to him, because she was that little fish under the shark, you know? And I was willing to work with him. I mean, obviously, my core alliance was always Tyson and Kieran. But I did say that at this tribal council. Obviously, it was a very heated tribal council. And what you guys see is pretty much pretty damn it onto what exactly happened. But I do remember at some point saying, I'm so disappointed in you, Chappies, because I really thought we were building our relationship together. And I was really disappointed in him because in camp, he was so nice to me and I was like cool with him. And I mean, he had like an endearing name for me. He would call me Wardi and he's like, oh, Wardi, this food's so nice. Da, da, da. And it was probably all play. But for me, it was like, I can mend fences with this guy. I can, because that was also like a test of my character. It was growth for me as a person. Like, wow, you know, you can actually come back with someone if you had a strained relationship with him. It's possible to build that. And I think I did genuinely get there because he was going to target Tyson. But because of Santini, my name got brought up. Because remember that interaction where he was like, I think we should go for Tyson. He was never gonna target me. It was only after Santini's emotional outburst and her feeling so emotional about me that she pushed him to target me. So I do believe our relationship wasn't that bad. We were busy and we were in the process of salvaging it.
Couple more questions. Obviously, the cooking was a large part of your game. You even talk about this in your exit interview, right? That you were able to sort of like find cooking as a way to center yourself within the game, and it made you very important at camp. Ironically enough, you know, you end up going out in a very food-based episode, but talk to me about finding that calm cooking and how much of a strategy that was from the get-go.
It was a big part of my strategy because I'm a very capable cook, even though your partner on your podcast doesn't seem to believe that. But I actually am quite a capable cook. And I knew that was my strength. And I've been cooking since I was 12 years old, and I've been able to cook to make simple things taste really well. It's really nice and really delicious. So I knew I could make something that was very simple taste very nice. And because I am very much a city girl, I've never gone camping. I've never done that, never had a desire to do it. In our house, we have a saying, roughing it is 3-star hotel. So we don't do that. My husband and I, we just don't. So for me, when I first got there, day one and day two, I really panicked because I didn't know how to build a shelter. I didn't know how to look after a fire or, you know, even make a fire. And I was like, holy crap, if I don't make myself useful year, I'm going to stand out. And I thought when Chappies went off for fire in that fire challenge, I was like, okay, if he comes back with fire, I'm going to put my hand up for cooking. And that's exactly what I did. And that was my safe space. And it was a space I knew, and I knew I could do it. Also, because while there were other people that could cook, no one had ever run a home there and with a big amount of people in the house. So no one had ever known how far food can go. So a cup of rice can feed X amount of people. No one had that knowledge but me. So I did it. I decided to assume the role of mother because I felt I was the best equipped to do it also. And yeah, it worked for me. It really did, because it gave me an identity in the tribe. And what made me panic, and I was like, phew, thank goodness I did that, because Chappies noticed in the first Vuna. He was like, wow, Wardo, you've really found your place in this tribe. Like, well done. You know, you're like, you were a bit unsure in the beginning. And I was like, holy shit, people were noticing. And like, now you found your place. And I was like, oh, thank goodness. You know, so yeah, it was a good thing for me.
Last thing I want to ask, you know, you mentioned playing the role of mother, which you do in real life as well. In your Jury Villa, you talked about how you wanted to play a game ultimately that you felt, you know, your son could watch back and you'd be happy to show him. I could imagine you've been watching the show alongside him. What has that experience been like, having to rewatch your game through his eyes?
It's been cool. I mean, he's 4 years old and he's super proud to see mommy. And he, when the challenges come on, he would just scream at the TV, go, mommy, or scream for everyone, actually, go, you can do it. And I think last night was so special, because for a four-year-old to not fully understand the context, but the minute I was voted out and they snuffed my torch, he instinctively came to me and he hugged me. And I actually whipped up my phone, being the typical freaking, I don't know, social media person that I am. I start, and it's on my Insta stories right now. I'm going to actually save it to my highlights, where my son just hugs me. He gives me a kiss and he hugs me. And I literally just filmed it. And I said, this is where it's at. This is all I wanted. You know, like, I don't care about the rest, really. I don't, like, you know, like, I never did it for the money. It was for the social experience. I've always been, I wouldn't call myself a super fan like my friend Dino there, or Renee, or any of them, or Kieran, but I am definitely a fan of the game, and someone who's watched a lot of seasons, not all of them, but a lot of them, and has always wondered how well I would fare in those conditions. And I'm very proud of myself for the way I played, and no one can tell me anything different. I love the game I played. I think I went at the right time. And my husband watching it as well, he said to me as well, he said, babe, I could see this was it for you. Like, you left at the right time. Anything further and you would have started questioning your values and your morals, and that's not who you are. And you left at the right time and you played a great game. So that's all I wanted. And yeah, I'm happy. I'm content.
That is amazing to hear. Well, it was so great getting to hear from you, Warda. I'm looking forward to seeing Warda the juror, especially. I'm sure you will not hold back when it comes to your reactions to what's to happen. But I'm really excited to be able to talk with you today and to see you throughout the game. Like you said, you held nothing back. You made for great TV, and we had a lot of fun as the fandom getting to watch you. So I wish you nothing but the best for you and your family. And thank you so much again for taking the time to talk with me today.
There you have it, everyone. Hope you enjoyed all the content for Survivor South Africa episode 12. Glad to see everyone across the internet really seem to love this dramatic episode. So we love going through it all with you. Remember to subscribe to the International Survivor Wrap-Ups feed. Follow us at Shannon Gates and at AMikeBloomType so that you never miss any of the content as we go into the final 4 weeks of the season. Exciting stuff ahead. Thank you as always for following along with us. We appreciate it so much. Until then, I will see you next time and keep evolving. Bye.
Survivor.
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 21 South African, 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
£1 million.
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 Tribe.
adventure of a lifetime.